The letter of the letter then that we bring formally what that is talking about food, because formal food, because the amendment accepted by the National Assembly is also convinced that they were changed. I hope that one member gets a deal and also probably want to have a meeting for this to be done so we can take some questions and then have some things.
Thank you. Well, we can start. It seems that some multi-skilled officials are able to deal with technology. then let's allow then the Department of Provincial and Local Government to take us through the drive.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Maybe just to get guidance up front, what we are prepared to do immediately is to go through a presentation that we have prepared, and this presentation really, in our view, provides a fairly good overview of the bill. Obviously, the other scenario is to go through the bill clause by clause, while that obviously, you know, is something that we're also prepared for, but I just want to get you know, it's useful just checklisting for you to indicate how you want to handle this. But I'm saying you are prepared to deal with this presentation, which in our view is a comprehensive overview. So if you are in the latter, then you are ready to proceed.
No, I think
you're
in the
chapter
after the overview.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to ask my colleague, Mr. Marvin Peter. He's the Chief Director in our department, and we will lead the discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. We have distributed a presentation, and I hope everyone has it. I assume everyone had it, because this is the presentation that I'll be going through. And I hope there's two slides on one page. If you have three slides on one page, I'll just refer to the slide as we go along so that you can follow this. Is that okay with the members? Thanks. Okay, slide one deals with the outline. What we'll do very briefly is go through the content of the bill. There's obviously three acts that are affected. That is the Demarcation Act and the Structures Act, the Municipal Systems Act, and the Property Rights Act. And there are also items which deal with repeal of legislation that which we consider redundant given the new sets of legislation on local government since 2000. And we'd also go through very quickly some of the consultations that have taken place and also give you an idea of what were the amendments of the Portfolio Committee on Local Government so that you can track what are the changes in the bill. So the bill that I'll be referring to is the bill that has come after the changes made by the Portfolio Committee on Local Government. I believe there's also a document that outlines, a piece of paper that outlines the changes and amendments made by the Portfolio Committee. I'm going to slide page 2, which is on one on background. And the slide on background, the bill stems from monitoring the implementation of key pieces of local government legislation and an urgent amendment. One of the key purposes is to refine and align policy provisions reflected
in... Let's clarify the issue. You have ended the topic on that amendment.
Yes. When the Portfolio Committee had amended the bill, there was also, from the state law, a document, a one-pager, which shows which sections were amended and what would be done. I don't know if you have
it. A copy?
Yes, Chairperson, I have a copy of it, and I can make it. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. So the first slide is on the background, and of course the express intent is to refine and align policy provisions reflected in recent legislation, strengthen enforcement measures, and improve technical and legal presentations. The affected pieces are, as I had mentioned previously. So I'm going on to the next slide, titled Background. The bill was previously submitted and presented to the Governance and Administration Cabinet Committee on 27 March 2007. The Cabinet Committee members requested that the following departments be consulted before the bill is forwarded to Cabinet again. And they were the Department of Public Service and Administration, the Department of Public Works, Department of Education, Department of Housing, Department of Minerals and Energy, Agriculture, Sport and Recreation. Amendments were effected to the bill as a result of the consultation with departments, and the bill was submitted to Cabinet on 30th of May 2007 for approval or publication. And then the bill was published for public comment on 4th of June. Now I'm going on to the 2.1 slide, which says amendments to the Demarcation Act and Municipal Structures Act. And the slide that follows it is 2.1, and it outlines two sections, one problem area and how we've addressed it through the clauses. And the problem area is that we have encountered in our work over the several years is bad planning and budgeting, for service delivery as a result of pieces of legislation that do not work in synergy and in tandem with the planning process. So the amendment clauses 1, 2, 3, 8 and 9, these amendments deal with fiscal alignment with boundary redetermination, with authorization to perform certain functions and adjustments of powers and functions between municipalities. Such redeterminations authorizations must take effect on the commencement date of the municipal financial year following the date of publication of the notice effecting such redetermination authorization or adjustment. This would ensure there is improved fiscal alignment and sufficient time for planning in this regard. Particular case in point is the issue of boundary redeterminations that take place, which means that take place in here, which means that in most cases the equitable share has to be adjusted in here. National Treasury felt that this was very disruptive because once they're here, they put out a schedule indicating all the allocations via the Division of Revenue Bill, which becomes an act and passed through Parliament. And what is, the experience was that every time a demarcation takes place in here, which necessitates adjustment of fiscal, the equitable share, we have to go back to the bill, do amendments and so forth. And to avoid that experience, they're saying that if the determinations do take place in here, they can take place in here, but the date of effect will take place 1st July every year. That will allow the National Treasury then to take into account all those redeterminations that have taken place, and in October, November, begin to factor that into their budgeting, especially into the equitable share, and then February, the Minister introduces the budget, and of course also the Division of Revenue Bill, and that allows for smooth planning and so forth. Now, the second problem area, which is on the second slide, is improving alignment with the Constitution and the implementation of policies to strengthen the role of ward committees. Clauses 4 and 5, the amendments deal with alignments with amendments pertaining to Section 139 interventions effective to the Constitution in 203. These amendments will result in the processes pertaining to dissolving of a municipal council now being aligned with dissolving a municipal council in terms of Section 139 of the Constitution. This is merely aligning with a constitutional amendment that was passed in 2003. Clauses 6 and 7, these amendments relate to the provision of out-of-pocket expenses for members of ward committees and the provision for making allocations to ward committees for undertaking development. These amendments will facilitate the strengthening of the role of ward committees. Going on to slide 2.2, which is amendments to the Municipal Systems Act, and then we go to the problem area there, and the problem area is enhancing the performance management system in primary legislation. Amendments to these address the problem. Clause 11, provision is made for specificity regarding the contract term of municipal managers at least 5 years and the provision for uniformity throughout the system. Clause 14, the previous ambiguity regarding the minister's authority to issue regulations under Section 72 is removed. Also, provision for consultation with the Minister of Public Service and Administration in issuing regulations. As you know, we have had a lot of ambiguity around that, a lot of queries, a lot of hesitancy on the part of local government to implement regulations and sort of guidelines and so forth. And we want to remove that kind of, because some of these instruments are absolutely critical in ensuring efficiency, especially with efficient administration and efficient legal compliance. Clause 22, the Code of Conduct of Municipal Staff Members is amended to include the declaration of interest by senior municipal officials. This will create synergy with the performance regulations and align with the Code of Conduct for Councillors. In the Code of Conduct for Councillors, we have a very similar declaration of interest, and we thought that staff members also, and here we're talking mainly of the senior staff members, the declarations will be in synergy with that of the councillors. So this is a question of bringing about synergy and alignment in the way we approach the declaration of interest. Then problem area. The next slide is the duty of provinces to conduct investigations on cases, instances of non-performance and maladministration of municipalities. Clause 17 is inserted to empower the Minister to advise the MEC to conduct an investigation and to provide the Minister and the Minister of Finance with a report detailing the outcome. Clause 20 also strengthens the role of provinces in conducting investigations. clearly we're just strengthening the hand of the minister, but also strengthening the provinces at the same time, so that where there are cases and instances where there's a reluctance to conduct investigations, and those matters invariably land on the table of the ministry and the department, then these clauses will give us that additional teeth and empowerment to begin to ask for investigations to be conducted where there's a reluctance and hesitancy, and also strengthen the province's role in this matter. Then problem area. The old schedules of the Municipal Systems Act are outdated and lenient in addressing potential corruption in procurement processes. As you know, the Municipal Finance Management Act has been passed and is accompanied by a set of regulations, supply chain management, and we're trying to bring all of these matters in alignment with what's there. If we do not bring alignment and synergy, then it's open to controversy, contradiction, and of course exploitation by municipalities in terms of reluctance to adhere to the spirit of the law. The amendments, clause 19 and 21, the amendments, item 6 of the Schedule 1 and item 4 of Schedule 2 are aimed at aligning the MSA to the MFMA and its regulations, leading to a prohibition of awarding a contract by a municipal council to a person who is in the service of the state or an advisor contracted to the municipality. Then problem area, the next slide, ambiguity with regard to participation of municipal officials in elections for the National Assembly, provincial legislatures, and municipal councils. The amendment is clause 13, section 71, provides for a staff member who becomes a candidate for election to NA or provincial legislature must resign not later than the date on which he or she is issued with a certificate in terms of the Electoral Act. It's very much similar to the MPOC and the Municipal Council. The clauses are drafted similarly. So I'll go to the next slide. Next slide, problem area. Municipalities require advance payments before issuing such a certificate, which places a heavy financial burden on consumers. Clause 18, the purpose is to lessen this financial burden, and it is proposed that the period be shortened from 120 to 60 days in order to remove the burden on consumers, especially where owners of property want to transfer their property, sell their properties, and also get, you know, do this with speed, so that they could get a transfer certificate. So that's what we're doing there. Also, in the Mkhwantwana judgment, the Constitutional Court ruled on the need for municipalities to provide owners of properties with copies of electricity and water accounts sent to tenants. So clause 16 provides for that, and section 102 is amended in this regard. That's so that in the event again of a sale of a house or property where you have tenants, you know, tenants leave and then the owner wants to sell his property and suddenly he's confronted with a huge bill. So the court ruled at least the owners must have these bills in time so that they can themselves begin to monitor what would be their possible obligation should the tenants leave and should they want to transfer their property. Then there are a number of technical amendments to the Municipal Systems Act. The definition of political office bearer is amended to include the current omitted deputy executive mayor, clause 10. And then clause 15, amendment to section 86H to include omitted subsection provided that bylaws pertaining to establishing a municipal entity must be consistent with the MFMA. Because the MFMA also makes provisions for that. Again, it's a question of technical and synergy. A correction to the Afrikaans text in section 106, clause 17. And then we go on to the section 2.3 now, which deals with the municipal property rate. And in the next slide that looks at technical correction, section 1, clause 23, technical amendments to definitions providing for legal citation and terminology clarity. Obviously, in the past, this was a problem. We picked it up, and we want to correct it in this law. Section 3, clause 24, amendment to align with the income tax and to provide for improved synergy between the legislation. Again, you know, one of the big themes about this legislation is alignment and synergies between other existing pieces of legislation pertaining to local government. Section 9, clause 26, technical amendments to remove uncertainty uncertainty pertaining to the expression permitted use as it is already defined in the Act. Section 17, clause 28, a technical amendment to the citation of the relevant Act, as the full citation was not available when the Act was adopted. Yeah, this is just a follow-on again on a sorting out citation. Section 86, clause 33, technical corrections of incorrect citations to another section. Now, with regard to the municipal property rates, I'm going to go very quickly, but my colleague here will brief you should you have any queries. The problem area was alignment of rates policies to municipal budget. And in the first instance, the development of rates policies is important, but separate to other phases of implementation. In the second instance, the phase of drawing a budget and tabling it for public comment must include quantification as determined by the valuation role. So Section 3, Clause 24, proposes to allow for a rates policy not to reflect the quantification in terms of the cost, that is revenue gone to the municipality, that is a rates policy not to reflect the quantification, but that the quantification be reflected in the budget, when the budget is presented for passing by a municipal council. Section 15, Clause 27 is therefore amended to give effect to the provisions of Clause 24.1. This is a consequential amendment. Then the next slide is a problem area, and that is the need to remove the burden of undertaking evaluation. It's not evaluation. Sorry, it's a mistake. It should be valuation, not evaluation. Especially where there is no intention to levy rates on public service infrastructure. Section 7, which is Clause 25, the proposed amendment to Section 7.2A.2 allows for municipalities not to be compelled to value public service infrastructure where there is no intention to levy rates on such an infrastructure. And I think last time when we were here, we did give some explanation of why that was the case, but we can revisit that matter. Should this amendment not be effective, there is a strong possibility that the municipality's valuation role may be set aside through litigation. So what we're providing for here is a much more effective, smoother way of getting the valuation role accepted so that it is not disrupted by litigation and as a consequence does not disrupt the budgeting process, because your valuation role plays an important role in telling you what your revenue is going to be for that year so that you can begin to do your budgeting. It underpins a critical part of expenditure. Revenue for expenditure. Then problem area, differential rating. Clause 19, Clause 29, a technical amendment pertaining to a correct citation. A further amendment provides for the use of different ratios. Example, as it relates to different property categories such as agriculture, commerce, and industry. Given that the Act allows for differential rating, and the amendment aims to clarify different legal interpretations in this regard. So there we're trying to again avoid different legal interpretations resulting in different actions or non-actions or non-adherence. So we're trying to smooth out and clear out any of these unnecessarily misinterpretations of the law. But we'll explain why different categories and so forth later on. Problem area, again, the next one is the next slide. Since the implementation of the Act, it has become apparent for national government, ministries of finance, and the provincial local government to protect ratepayers through setting the limits on rate revenue. Clause 20, Clause 30, the proposed amendment allows for the curbing of rate revenues either as a basket or per category of properties. Here again, very, very quickly, I mean, it's providing a clause for the ministers to intervene where there is excessive and very high setting of rates in order to recoup high revenue on certain area categories of property which might have an adverse effect on the economy that those categories of properties contribute to and generally on economic activity. Repeal of legislation, which is 2.4, the next slide, and I'm going down to 2.4. The bill contains a schedule of redundant legislation pertaining to local government that must be repealed, and we give an example there of the Young Camp Shop Act. The Act deals with administration of the town between the former Transvaal and the Cape, And then we give another example, the old promotion of local government affairs. Oh, most of these have been replaced with the new sets of local government. On consultations, I'm just going to go through this very clear. There's been several consultations with all the key stakeholders. We've received comments. I'm going to, on the next slide, where I'll just run through some of the comments were considered and some key amendments were made. This is to the first version. Obviously, the department received comments, and the department put in the first version, so we're giving an idea of what the first version. What you have is the amended version by the portfolio committee. But the first version comments, we did amendments with regard to processes regarding provincial government intervention in municipalities, amendments to section 34, 35 of the Municipal Structures Act, aligning with amendments to 139 interventions, effective to constitution in 203, compulsory establishment of ward committees, but that was the first amendment and that clause is no longer there now in your new bill. Amendments to section 72, 73, 74 of the Municipal Structures Act relating to compulsory establishment of ward committees. Other comments that were received, which we felt should be considered in a much more broader, much more intensive session, and also which is and will be considered during the white paper process and review of local government, related to the drafting pertaining to item 14, shareholder 1 of the Systems Act to provide more clarity. Other comments were received which dealt with further work by DPLG on the refinement of local government legislation include technical matters such as provisions on council whips, powers and functions of municipality, big one in the white paper process and review of the contractual and service delivery arrangements between municipalities and REP, conditions of employment of Section 57 managers, big issue, but has to be debated with all the stakeholders, SALBIC, SALDA, and also now NEDLAC also wants to be part of that process. Issues pertaining to pension funds and the minister's regulatory powers and rates amnesties for the REP. Everybody knows REP means regional electricity distribution agencies that we set up. I'm not going to go through other comments. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. But I will go to the slide 4, which is amendments made to the first version of the bill by the Portfolio Committee of Local Government. And the amendments are there before you. The following amendments were made to the first version of the bill by the Portfolio Committee. Clause 6 was rejected on advice of state law advisors, that is making ward committees compulsory. Clause 7 was amended as follows on page 4 from line 24 to omit section 5 and to substitute out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph C must be paid from the budget of the municipality in question. The National and Local Municipal Council must determine the criteria for the calculation of out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph C. A metro and local member may make arrangements for the payment of out-of-pocket expenses to members of ward committees in respect of the participation of ward committee members in the activities of the ward committee. Now those first three amendments were actually amendments in the first call, but they were rearranged in a sequence that the portfolio committee preferred is more appropriate. And then the fourth one was in addition by the portfolio committee, it wasn't in the original, and that the municipal council may allocate funds and resources to enable a ward committee to perform their functions, exercise their powers, and undertake development in their wards within the framework of law. Other amendments, in the next slide, clause 13 on page 5 from line 37, to omit of the municipality. What was the sentence construction was, you know, it had of the municipality twice repeated in the section, in the sentence. Clause construction, and therefore they took out one of that. On page 6 up line 43 to insert the following paragraph. This was a suggestion made by KZN, KwaZulu-Natal, because of it will support the development of revised performance regulation, especially those relating to disciplinary codes and suspensions taking place at local government. And therefore, yeah, notwithstanding 671H, the minister may make regulations to provide for a disciplinary code and procedures for municipal managers and managers directly accountable to municipal managers. Clause 20 was rejected. That was a clause that provided for the minister to create and to give an exemption where there's an alternative mechanism already identified to provide a particular service at the municipality. Example, REDS have already been identified, it's cabinet decision, it's accepted that it's a government policy that they will in the future provide electricity for local government, so that's one. And they also moved within the water section for regionalization of water services. But that was rejected. Clause 23 on page 8 in line 24 to omit or and to substitute the word and. Chair, I thought that would give us a very quick, brief idea of what has happened so far with the bill as it is now presented to your commission.
Thank you very much for that. Are there any additions that the team would like to make? On the way, because the text is written, therefore, there's nothing to add. We are ready for engagement, putting in question times and so on. I think I'm taking the glass then and say that we've had the brief from the department taking us through the deal, which is it's a deal really that is trying to intervene, not in a substantial way, trying to address certain decisions that are there. And I think all of us know that is a process of a good local government white paper. Consequently, there will be a law that comes out of that. When you deal with the white paper, the outcome of that from policy to come from the law. It can be one, it can be many. But as a matter of fact, the law will be met. You might not know the number, but you know that at least one will come out. Having said then that, I would like them to request the colleagues present to raise questions of clarity. On areas where you feel that you want to raise questions of clarity, so that you are able to be informed of the issue that are here in front of us. I was thinking that maybe it must be in a sequential form, but I think let me leave it. It's a blood group as well.
Yeah,
see what happens. Then the process, I think, as we all will be able to ensure that processes are challenged and controlled. I can see, Mr. Roo, you are itching. Are you ready? Are you ready?
Yes, I'm not itching, and I don't know if I'm ready either. But I would like to know about the question of when you become a candidate, you must resign. Why is that? It is not better once you are elected that you should resign. If I can get clarity on that. And then as far as the ward committees are concerned, we say that the ward committees in general can undertake development in their wards within the framework of the law. Is there any curbing as to what type of development that can be? And then lastly, just as far as the trying to curb people stealing. Are we covered enough as far as councils are concerned in doing business with the council? What, for instance, keeping partners in a company and things like that? Are we fully covered as far as that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Webster.
Okay, just on a matter of clarification, the department mentioned that should a municipality be included or demarcated, if is it another problem or whatever, that the equitable share will only be adjusted, that province or that municipality will get its share, but the equitable share will be from the 1st of July. So what does it do until then? Does it take a turn midway? Does it just continue to receive its equitable share from that particular province until that date is meant to be incorporated. Yes, that's right.
Thank you very much, Mr. Winslow. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you've touched so many things, and also in touching the white paper, I was a bit even hesitant to engage in any questions, because I know that you would know that in the position of ISP, what it was when the B actually came. At that stage in the past, it would be the same as this stage. But nonetheless, I think I'm obliged to engage in the questions. Jefferson, on page 11, on the problem area where it speaks of a differential rating. Now, I would like to know when we talk of differential rating, are we referring from province to province? So what is intended when I say that? It actually emanates from the... right from the onset, I think on page 4, where it speaks of the problematic area there of improving planning and budgeting for services delivery. I was of an opinion that we have one set of uniformity which should comply in terms of the constitution, that we don't have banana provinces where the other one will determine that I'll go this route. I don't think we still deal with the bylaws. That is a problematic area that I would like to know what the differential problem are they referring to. The other one comes on page 8. It is spoken of the Mkhontwana judgment to the Constitutional Court ruled on the need of the municipalities to provide owners of properties with the copies of electricity and water accounts sent to tenants. Though we are actually busy with that in the rental housing, where we talk of cutting of amenities. Now, yeah, I don't know the judgment based on that encounter on what it was of the municipality providing electricity and water accounts sent to tenants. Is it dealing with dealing or what is it? Is it also having a differential approach in that sphere? Those are the two areas. I'm happy that they have titled the issue of what committee. In what sense? And any person would have probably think to not make use of the services of what committees, because those people are actually on a touching base directly with the people, where the councillor cannot even be able to address those issues. They communicate directly with the people. Why would you say we want to do away with such an instrument which is so influential? Thank you, sir. The thing is what? Well, there are two things, Lord, and I think you are supposed to enlighten me on. The first one, enlighten me on, is the position of the ISP. You know, I come from the same province. We have never even whispered in my ear to say what is the position. Probably, even the colleagues would like to hear what is the position of that on this matter. Not the second one of the World Committee, I think this one fresh in our mind. We went to Stellenbosch, if you remember, 2 years ago. It was clear that the municipalities there view World Committee with contempt. You have everybody was already the same thing, that they are not utilized, undermined, they are not taken seriously. The old councillors, they are in these structures, I suppose, even Democrats, are not really playing a significant or allowing them to play a significant role. Now, here's my the view that you have, the passion, is not applicable across in terms of utilizing the structures in place. Money.
Chapter says, yes, we are not actually debating the deal. I would probably put two caps on me. If one would say what is the view of the Haojian province, you would be speaking to a different and that type, because you would be representing the views of the province where I come from. But if you would say, express the views, because that will happen when we debate, where the position of IST would probably, if I debate in that case, I'll be presenting a different view, because there I'll be now speaking in terms of the policy of the party, which our belief is that, if you would know that the reason why we are revisiting this act is because of the Matatiele judgment. And for that reason, IST believes that come hail, wind, what, the government only base its argument on fixing what the shortcomings of the law, which was highlighted by the judge. But in the true essence, we believe that the people haven't yet come. Some will come and some will not. Their views are not taken seriously. When coming also to the party, if people were not happy in the years that have gone by, why should we now say, change the boundaries, let them go to whatever place the government decides them to go, then we'll fix the party? Why didn't we do that, sir? Why now? And we are not convinced that is the route we have taken. Now, I think I've given a few scenarios there. If I was talking, expressing the views of Haojian, which did not affect us, I know that it did affect us at that Hutto, but we have followed the right route. We did go to people, they were saying anything. And people would say, ask in mind that the first negotiating mandate was that we were taking the views of the people. But we could not probably lobby other provinces to support us on that, and therefore our views fall away fast. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I think everybody will be happy to hear the ISP view on this issue, because we didn't know it. Welcome, Minister. I think this is the local government affairs of the day. This is the first performance, but we'll come to participate in that as well. So, you're welcome to sit with us and observe the views expressed in the meeting here. Even by the administration from the other department. We'll move this way and come back.
Thanks, Jefferson. I think we are lucky that we've got the private information from there. Because if you don't know that this bill, it comes because of the material issue. Having said that, I would like to find out, as they are saying, that this bill is going to strengthen the role of the ward committees, and they've mentioned Section 139. I did not get it clear. There is a question which, when we brief informal, which I raised with the department, so that they can be able to check that when we devolve a municipality, when the MEC is taking over intervening in the municipality, we have encountered a problem when we go and verify. We found that the ward committees are saying they cannot function because they are chairs, which are ward councillors, which are chairs of the ward committees in a ward. That's that once if they are suspended, then they are not functioning. They just go home and want to say, no, chairperson are no longer there, so won't be participating. So I wanted to check whether they've done any research towards that, what can be done to strengthen the ward committees when Section 139 has been effective. I would like to hear that. Secondly, okay, I will come something.
Thanks, Jefferson. Let me straight away zoom into the assistance that will be given to white committees from now on. The out-of-pocket expenses. My question is here, the experience that this white sense what committee are in the midst of that particular country in terms of their attitude and what. In one instance, they are just given some food parcels when they're in the room. Some of them are just given, they're being transported to go to those meetings. In one instance, just to remember, those white committees hold us hostage in one municipality, where because we know that they are supposed to be our system, but because of the attitude of that particular municipal manager, she refused to budge. She said, in terms of her instruction from the power that be, she's not allowed to use any sense of that municipality to assist the white committee. And you have to intervene, if you remember, where transport was given to those participants of the work committee. And they were even sent to buy some half browns and some high char at one hundred one restaurant next door for them to eat. Now, I want to say that this out of pocket, from how it's going to be regulated, I know we can't put everything into an act because the regulation has to regulate this. Because we can't allow people who are assisting us as government to be at the mercy of some cancer. If we can know, if this can be untaxed, this out of pocket, because if it's not regulated, we are running into problems where those very special people called the work committee are going to receive those handouts or crumbs from the cancer, which is not acceptable here. If that can be unfair to some of us. Secondly, I'm glad that there is a particular clause that will try to correct the contract in terms of municipal managers. Here I want to be very strong. If I will be unpopular, let it be here. It is high time when this is corrected, because, for example, it is a shame and scandal to see that because of this particular arrangement, some of our municipal managers are pretty hard at the president of the country. You can't see that in anywhere, but in our country, strange enough. Municipal managers are paid more than the president. Now let's come to the attempt. As I'm thinking, there's a case in the far north, in the Vembe district, where a municipal manager was appointed by the district mayor, and the council revolted against the mayor. They said the terms that have been given to this municipal manager, we don't agree with it. As a council, we are obliged, or we are the only people who can draw the contract and terms of this municipal manager. When the mayor resisted and wielded her power, she was expelled as a municipal mayor. Now here, those kind of challenges in this particular clause, how are we addressing? There's a case pending in the High Court there. It will be very much interesting to know, because some of us, some of the terms and contracts of this municipal manager, where to review them. You know, I was municipal manager in on the plane, you know, that village are part of the people who were selecting to check if it is suitable one to be implemented. I played a role in shortlisting him. Now, immediately, the panel that was involved approved him. He was employed, and he's very good. But guess what? One day we were together in the plane. When I got into the plane, I went straight into the extra strong, the economy class. He went straight to business class. The first time I interviewed and shortlisted, the first time I employed, immediately on the plane, he was now my senior. He went into the business class and I remained into the economy. So that's it. Yeah, okay. Those kind of things happen. I think they look at some of them are policy checks. I know you assist me on that one. Now, the conduct, it, even here, is addressing the conduct of the municipal staff. Linked with the conduct, code of conduct of municipal council. I want us to look at the two components in the same context. Because the code of conduct of local councillors differs from the code of conduct of staff. Now here, I wonder if, unless my reading is wrong, but let me check if I will not slap things together because their conduct definitely cannot be the same. I'm never changing it the other way around. That brings me to the issue that was raised by my colleagues here. Of a person who is a candidate of a particular political party. There's a legislation, correctly remind me, where they said immediately you are on the list of a particular organization, you must resign. And on this one, we are saying, immediately there is a certificate from the IEC, from the top or whoever, that you are not elected a member of parliament, MPL, permanent delegate. It's only then you are deemed to have been to have resigned. If you can verify that, because I know that two people are one of the critics in one particular debate. I'll be reminded by my colleagues who are in that chair. So, for now, Chair, those are the things that I wanted to check here. I'll come for the second bite if time allows. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to get a clarity. It is in this case, it is proposed that the period be shortened from 120 days to 50 days. If I can be clarified and get the right answer, what is the purpose? Why are they changing from 120 to 50 days? Thank you.
Thank you, Mama. Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thank you,
Mama.
I'd like to come back to the ward committee issue from another perspective of whether the department has costed this. Certain municipalities can barely function. There's not enough income as it is. Now, if some municipalities that might only have five ward committees, you have other metros that might have 150, if not more. Meeting once a month at X amount, and then it says here that local council must determine the criteria for calculation of out-of-pocket expenses. So in other words, this is being thrust in our bank. There's no extra money being allocated to the municipalities on the budget and say, right, that's the money, that money must be spent on water needs. It's just saying, for the local council, you must find the money. Fetch the money somewhere, and then it says reasonable expenses. Now, everybody out-of-pocket expenses or reasonable expenses. Now, that is open to what is reasonable, what you're meeting for a ward committee. Some might say, let's go to a five-star hotel and have a banquet because we're going to have a committee meeting. Others might say, no, we only want to use transport, which is no problem. How is I'm very concerned on what the actual cost of this could be and has it been costed some way, rather than just saying, sorry, municipal council is not provided, but it's just for only fee. I would like to certainly have some clarity on that.
Thank you very much.
Professor?
Yeah, the sense of the mind wonder is to self-realize to worship one about the public service amendment in which said the candidate will resign when they have been elected or when they are going to be called in. In that one, they've made an exception of a part-time candidate. In this one, I don't see that. I want to find out whether they've looked at that. What about the part-time candidate? Is he or she going to resign when he has been elected to be a politician in the government? I want to check that part-time candidate. I understand the full time and all that, but I'm not sure whether they've omitted that intentionally or just an oversight. Thing.
I don't want to come back again for a second bite. This is my last question for this session. In this year again, we're trying to avoid a situation where the contract is awarded to a person who is in the service of the state or as an advisor to the municipality. I would be happy to know how are they going to get this. Because I can tell you now, this is a tough one, where you get names who are not even part of the people who are in the staff council. But when you follow the chain, the person, at the end, the contract is given to someone who is not known here. But if you follow where the money will be deposited at the end of the day, it goes back to the same person who is sitting there, who has decided over the contract. How are they going to get this right, person? Because this is a problem. Instead of the council or the state empowering those who are being empowered, professors were empowering those who are already in power in terms of awarding them contracts. You say the name of Makubane, all of a sudden you are giving Mukwena that contract, but the name is that of Makubane. If we can also clarify this one, it's a good idea, but the question is, I wonder how are they going to get it right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think let's allow the department to perform on questions posed. Mr. Afrika, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to hand over to my colleagues and I'll come in at the end. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, there's a number of issues around the...
That's very clever, because you are running away from Polish.
There are a number of questions on the ward committee, and I will try to articulate as best I can our position on the ward committee. Number one, I want to say in general that the department does not want to micromanage municipalities, because there's a danger of encroachment into affairs which the municipality has set up structures for which it can adequately manage. Rather, the department has taken an approach of responding to certain needs that have been felt on the ground among ward committee members and among MPs who have been out there in their constituencies. And one of the needs is that we need to actually provide for some out-of-pocket expenses to the members who participate in these ward committees. Because they are a very critical, first and foremost, a very critical participation mechanism that brings to the council or comments on the council or interacts with the council on the basis of what wards, people living in wards feel about their needs, their development needs, their aspirations, and so forth. So that mechanism is an important mechanism. And therefore, as much as you get in other institutions, office bearers being rewarded on a both a provincial, national, and national level, we should be able to reward these members. But we're also saying that the manner in which this takes place must be done in a way in which a particular municipality adopts a policy and defines a policy. The principle is there, you must pay out of pocket expenses, but you must adopt a policy. Why do we say municipality must adopt a policy? Because a municipality has a budget, and it must then decide in terms of the revenues that it has, how much and what it's going to pay in terms of out-of-pocket expenses. So in a sense, invariably, your budget will begin to play a constraining factor on the extent to which you can provide out-of-pocket expenses. But it will also allow, by a municipality adopting a policy, it will also allow them to determine the basis on which they can afford and on what methods they can. Because we have different municipalities with different revenue capacities and different abilities to pay out of pocket expenses. Clearly, in guidelines and in regulations, we can look at further regulating the out of pocket expenses. There is a process in the department, and I mentioned this area, where there's a complete review of public participation as a whole. There's an internal document looking at all aspects of that, and one of the outcomes of that document is to look at ward committees and what further can be regulated in terms of ward committees. So, on the issue of the development issues of ward committees, now here again, we don't want to take an approach that is too prescriptive, because that can run the risk of contestation that the department and its piece of legislation has encroached too far into the affairs of the municipality. So we're saying development projects, but we do know that that there is some precedent set for it already. There's a de facto activity about giving money to ward committees. We do not really expect that, you know, ward committees will be involved in huge, high-profile kinds of structural projects. We believe that, you know, that ward committees should be involved in projects pertaining to their ward, and should be also a mechanism which involves ward committee members in planning, in the first step to planning in the local government. So we don't envisage huge projects of the nature of, you know, building dams or something of that nature. So that's some of the issues on the ward committee. Then there have been issues on a number of other matters. For instance, the issue of the Mkhonswana judgment, and I think my colleague here, who is a legal person from the department, will give us a bit more insight into the Mkhonswana judgment. Reducing 120 to 60 days, the process as it operates at the moment is that you know, there's 120 days. If you want a certificate of transfer, you pay in up to 120 days, and the cost of this to a person applying to transfer his property is huge. So the Law Society, in fact, of South Africa, recommended that it actually be reduced to 60 days so that it lessens the burden on the person who owns the property and wants to transfer their property. Now, with regard to the question of out-of-pocket expenses again and ward committee members being at the mercy of the municipality, it's quite a complex and a difficult issue. Here again, I don't think we want to regulate every aspect of the behavior of every official. It's quite a difficult issue. But if we have this in law, then it is expected that all senior officials, including the mayor, abide and implement the law as such, if it's in the law. So if it's in the law, there can be no question of whether or not I should pay you out of pocket questions. It will only be a question, yes, I can pay you out of pocket expenses, but then a defined policy must be adopted by the council to do this. There are other matters
which I'd ask some of my colleagues to come in now on the ratings section especially, and maybe do you can just give some idea of any concern or judgment you have in people on that. Thank you.
Okay, I will start, but if some of the things are not covered, there is a colleague behind me as well. She will come in if some of the things have not been sufficiently covered. I think the first question I will have to address is the issue which was raised in the context of the supply chain regarding as to whether are we sure that there is a bulletproof arrangement to an extent that some councillors won't benefit from some of this contract by way of them being sleeping partners in some of these companies. Let me say that at the outset, that what we are doing here is not a policy which we as GPLG have come up with, although we participated in the process. What we are doing, we got the regulations in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, to which there is a concurrency between our Minister and the Minister of Finance, but that work, the nitty-gritty itself, has been done primarily by the National Treasurer. So what we are doing is to align these pieces of legislation. But my view will be that if some of the things around the so-called sleeping councillors and sleeping partners in some of these companies, if it should not have been addressed, it might be that you need to take into account to what extent, if you look at the law as a whole, regarding even people who serve in the board and all these things and shareholders, how do you regard them? Because you do have in companies or even in partnerships people who are regarded as the main shareholders, and you've got people who have got minority interests and all. So you will have to look at that throughout the whole ambit of the law, and you might even need to take into account companies' law and all those sorts of things. So, but all what I'm saying is, to an extent that some of these things should have been dealt with, is what the MFMA and its related regulations were supposed to deal with, but it has to be within the context of the law. Then the second aspect which I will deal with, there was an issue where, in reference to when we talked about the definitions of the Municipal Finance Year in relation to the Municipal Demarcation Act as well as the Municipal Structures Act. Then there was this apparent, for a lack of a better word, confusion about provinces to some extent. Let me clarify it. If you look at what we are doing here, this is the Local Government Laws Amendment Act. And the pieces of legislation we are repealing are rules which affect municipalities. We are not doing anything in this set of legislative review or amendments which have got an impact on provinces. And also let me clarify that when you talk about equitable share, which municipalities get, they don't get it from provinces, they get it from the national fiscus. And that is what we do together with National Treasury as GPLG by way of the Division of Revenue Act. But if you talk about the provincial equitable share, there is another process which gets dealt with through the Budget Council as well as the Division of Revenue Act. So here, we are talking about alignment of these things insofar as municipalities are concerned. We are not dealing with provinces. And coming back to the issue of 1st July, what we are seeing as a policy paradigm is that whatever we do, if we change powers and functions of municipalities, either by way of national government through our ministers or provinces through the MECs responsible for local government because they got those powers, we are setting a clear regime of law as to how these things ought to be done, so that by the time we and National Treasury start coming with the issue of equitable share for the various municipalities, we take into account the powers which these municipalities will have. So the budget which comes into operation on the 1st of July of every year should have taken the issues of powers and functions, so that there are no unfunded mandates which municipalities sit with. So those are the policy objectives which we are trying to solve here. Then I think the third question which was raised also is, it was for clarity actually. It was as to what we mean in relation to page 11 of the slide when we talked about differential rating, and there was a question as to whether are we talking about from provinces to provinces. What we are dealing with is that is in relation to the Municipal Property Rates Act, where we are making a clarity when we talked about differential rating. Let me say, we are not talking about issues across provinces or across municipal jurisdictions. We are looking at an internal issue which relates to the municipality within the jurisdiction of the municipality itself. Because municipalities have got the power to say, for example, I will charge 1 cent in a rent to the commercial property category, but for residential property categories, it will be, for example, 0.1 cent for agricultural property, it will be 0.8 cents. So that is what we are dealing with, is that differentiation for the property categories within that municipality itself. So that is what we are trying to clear. And the reason we are clearing that, there have been, and what we didn't say perhaps by way of presentation, most of the things we are doing, we are trying to clear some of the implementation challenges which municipalities have been dealing with in terms of interpreting the law and all those things. So we are making it clear that can happen, then we can come with those interventions. And so that is what we are trying to do. I think the other question which was raised as well, it was in relation to the things of when we talk about improving planning and budgeting again, that all what we are saying, you've got different pieces of legislation dealing with various issues. So the Systems Act also encroaches on financial issues for particular reasons. And the Municipal Finance Management Act does that. So the Municipal Property Rights Act does that. And the Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, which has been recently been enacted, also does that. But all what we are trying to say is to ensure that when we start seeing certain gaps emanating from these pieces of legislation, we need to align them so that municipalities are not confused when they try to conform to the requirements of the Municipal Finance Management Act, then there is something in the Municipal Property Rights Act or in the Municipal Fiscal Powers and Functions Act which moves in a different direction. So these are some of the things which we have picked, and we are trying to make it easier for municipal practitioners and councillors to deal with these things. And it might be that in future we'll pick up some of those things, so we'll continue doing that. But the fact we can't take out the things and come with one legislation, because by their nature they need to be dealt with separately in the relevant pieces of legislation. But we need a harmony. So there needs to be harmonization as to how these things are done to make the life of municipalities as well as the constituents of municipalities easier. So that is what we are trying to do. I think the other issue... The other issue which was raised as well, it was, well, we are making this alignment between the Municipal Systems Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act in relation to supply chain management issues or procurement processes of municipalities. But the question was said that although this appears to be a noble thing we are trying to do, how sure are we that will have a bulletproof arrangement to deal with, for a lack of a better word, so-called planting? And my view is that when we talk about issues which relate to planting, because that is the same thing, where you got somebody hiding and you start going through the chain, you'll find that when you go down perhaps after going through 5 different people, you find that it's somebody. That is a national issue. It also arises in terms of the procurement processes which we as national government deal with. And people have been raising that at the national level. So, and how you deal with planting issues is difficult to deal with them, because some of the things is evading the law or violating the law. But the issue is when you have a law which makes the things clear that somebody cannot benefit, then the challenge is for the communities and members of the public, that if they see the things either through what you call whistle blowing and all these sorts of things, then if they come forth, these things can be investigated. And these are some of the things which the law enforcement agencies need to deal with. But unless if there is a proof, but what we are making clear through law is to say these things are illegal if they happen, then as to how you deal with them, then it will be up to the members of the public to come forth and let the law enforcement agencies unravel these issues and deal with these issues accordingly. I think those are the issues. I don't know, Veronica, if there are some other things you want to come in. Okay.
Just to respond on the condoner judgment, if members may need a copy of the judgment, can be made available. But the principle in the case is that if a tenant occupies the property,
the person is not supposed to inherit the debt that has been incurred by the owner. That is the principle. But the full judgment should be made available to the members. Regarding the continuation of the ward committee in an event of a dissolution by Nintendo Section 139, a ward committee is established by Section 75 of the Structural Act. So, Chairperson, if a committee that establishes the ward committee is dissolved, we also view that a ward committee cannot continue without the principal committee that is actually a shot in the But having said that, if you read Section 139 of the Constitution closely, it gives power to the administration to actually take any appropriate steps to fulfill whatever the council says to do so. So it's not really restrictive in saying that if the council is dissolved, then everything falls away. But when you read the structures, you can realize that it has been established by the council. So automatically, if the council is dissolved, then the ward committee must also fall away. I think that's it.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, my colleagues are almost as clever as me. They left one or two difficult questions for me. but I think let me start by adding one or two things, and then I'll deal with one or two outstanding questions. I think on the issue of ward committees, Chairperson, I think that the overall point to emphasize is that the provisions, by and large, are still enabling provisions here. In other words, they're not mandatory provisions with regard to what we're saying around ward committees. I think what we were reporting to the committee is that we initially inserted a clause whereby we were wanting to make where we were intending to make ward committees mandatory, but subsequent opinion that we received basically suggested and indicated that this was unconstitutional. So I'm simply saying all the other issues that we are raising, they basically then fall within that framework of ward committees being a voluntary instrument, community participation instrument within our system of government. So I thought that's the first point that we need to just emphasize. But also, as we were making all of these additional amendments on the section, again, just to emphasize what my colleague has said, we have seen some really interesting instances coming from establishments across the country whereby they have put a number of innovative practices in place to strengthen and allocate resources to ward committees. There's the example of the Free State, where we undertook a national pilot exercise where they allocated resources to municipalities there, and we really saw some impressive results. So that's simply one instance whereby we thought we need to give some indication that greater resources need to be allocated. In that regard, let me also respond to the honourable member that asked whether we have costed this, and just to say very directly that from a national perspective, we have not costed what the implications are with regard to some of these provisions. Again, we are moving on the assumption that municipalities will have to make resources available within their means, but I think the policy direction that we're moving in is very, very clear. Also, Chairperson, to say that we are busy working on an additional policy framework on public participation, and this will further clarify how we expect municipalities to go about making resources available. When we say, and there was a question, when we say that development projects must take place within the context of the law, there are a number of things that we mean here. But the one thing that we definitely have at the back of our minds, in fact, we actually almost inserted the clause in the way in which I'm going to explain it now, was that any development activity or project that the ward committee must undertake must be within the framework of the local IDP. Because clearly, if it takes place with outside of the context of the IDP, then that will create its own problem. So obviously the law spells out very clearly what an IDP is, who has authority for ultimate signing of etc. So I'm just explaining that was one very important idea that we had when we said that it must take place in the context of law. I think the kind of final point that I wanted to clarify, again, to the question around 139 and what happens to all committees when you have an intervention of that sort. We must always remind ourselves that all committees have an advisory role in our system of local government right now. They do not make legislative or executive decisions. They simply are forums through which various proposals and suggestions can be made, and it's through the local ward councillor those are then taken to the municipality. But we are strengthening this chairperson simply by saying that they can also undertake various development projects. And again, we are saying this on the basis of kind of practice that we are seeing right now. So chairperson, I thought I should just add some of those matters with regard to ward committees. Maybe I should just add a final point around resources. You know, the local government equitable share has been increasing quite significantly over the last couple of years. And also, if you look at the medium-term budget policy statement of the Minister of Finance, you'll also see going forward, we continue to really set aside and increase the overall quantum of money to local government in general, but also to municipalities in particular. I'm saying that because that is the pot of money, in our view, that municipalities need to reprioritize for important activities such as community participation. Now, chairperson, let me also then just come to a separate issue now. I'm stepping off from ward committees. On the question of the financial alignment, you know, in other words, when should budgets come into place that take into account any adjustments to a boundary, for example, or to a particular power function? The question was posed, what happens in the interim? Once that determination is made from that point to the next point when the next financial year starts. And I think the fairly straightforward answer must be that we expect that interim period to be characterized by proper planning and budgeting. That is precisely why we are trying to build in that time period. Because if it happens in year, clearly a municipality would not have budgeted for any alignment or adjustment to a particular power or function. So I think that matter I wanted to clarify. My second last issue, Chair, is the issue of the question on codes of conduct. Simply to make the point that in current legislation, the Systems Act, we do have separate codes of conduct for officials and for elected office bearers, and simply we were trying in this legislation simply to take from the one to the other way we thought it was appropriate in terms of certain facts that we regard as an appropriate and good practice. Chairperson, the last and most difficult question that my colleagues have not responded to, in my view, and I'm glad that the Minister of Public Service Administration is also here. I'm not sure if it makes it easier or more difficult for me. It's the question of the proposal that we currently have in this bill that says any public servant who wants to make himself or herself available for election must resign at the point of that person appearing on the list. Now the primary reason that informed this provision and the way in which it crafted, we just really thought that there are quite severe governance implications if we do not have this provision. Let me explain in a half a sentence, because I think it's quite a complex matter. If there's a local official currently employed and there are elections coming up, this person makes himself available, then the issue arises, you know, how do you deal with the fact that this person is an official, he clearly will have to be part of some electioneering process. How do you manage that kind of interim period? It becomes very difficult. And then, of course, the end scenario, should that person be appointed or be successful, then I think the scenario is clear. Should the person not be successful, that person obviously, if we do not have this, the person would then have to come back to the administration, the municipality. And again, we just thought from a governance point of view, it becomes very, very complex. It becomes very complex. Issues of perception and so on and so forth. So I think, Chairperson, there were overriding governance concerns that we had when we put this position in. But quite clearly, I can assure this committee, we are very much aware of the provisions within the other bill that is currently serving within Parliament. and we are having quite robust discussions amongst ourselves on that matter. And I think, quite frankly, we would be prepared to engage with the committee and obviously abide by the final decision of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What you have left, Mr. Appellate, links that issue. It's a passion of them, on the part-time capital.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Well, in terms of the current phrasing of the clause, we have not made that distinction, so basically it would apply, unless I'm stand to be corrected, but we have not made that distinction. If you stand for office, you stand for office. So we have not made that distinction currently.
Mr. Webster,
I can come back to the thing of public service standing for election. You look, and I know this is not the first time it's been raised, the constitutionality of it. If that person, as far as I'm aware, anybody's entitled to stand, but not conditionally, they must then resign. I can understand from the department's point of view, it's not really feasible, or you wouldn't want somebody to stand and then go on a canvassing or a for 2 or 3 months and then say, oh well, I'm not in now, I'm back again, you know, or yes, I'm in now, I resign. I understand it's not a really healthy situation, but there are other means of doing it, of putting a person on leave or ways around it. Has this been, you're not frightened that this is going to go to the Constitutional Court and they're going to say you're right because you're making it a conditionality now, that yes, you can, you must resign. I'm just clearly from that. I know this is not the first time this has been raised. We've got them back to ward committees. All I can say there is that some people are equal and some are more equal than others. So in other words, what idea here is you must make sure that you're a ward committee member in a nice, plush town with lots of money, and you can go for a 3-course meal and have an air-conditioned bus come and fetch you. But if you're from a very poor, and believe you me, there are plenty of municipalities which I don't like using the word bankrupt, I think the word they use now is technically financially imbalanced. Balance their books at all. And so then if you're a member there of a committee, you'll be lucky, you've got to use your bicycle to go to the meeting, you might get half the sandwich and a bottle of water. Expect anyone to comment.
Well, you know, it's nice to
give
the comment. Get me there. This one is the first time I hear this one. Technically,
Mr. Chairperson, I think Mr. Africa is running our way. Because I remember when we were discussing this in the public amendment about the part time. Councillors, we said no, it should be corrected from the municipal laws amendment B. Now we are in the municipal laws amendment B, and we say no, it should be corrected from the other side.
Yes. When I was searching the floor, I tried to get the relevant section changed. When I was arguing for this point, where in this bill we are debating now, it is saying just for being on the list, you are different in the line from your employment, right? But when the public service amendment bill, the one I'm going to discuss is after this item. It is specific clause 32 of that bill, this particular bill. Clause 32 is true.
Okay.
It reads, an employee may be a candidate for election as a member of the National Assembly, a legislature, or a municipal council, subject to the code of conduct contemplated to section 41 sub 2 of the Remedial Act, and may other and any other prescribed leave and conditions. Then you come to the real thing. An employee elected as a member of the National Assembly or representation or a full-time member of the Judicial Council shall be, this is legal, shall be deemed to have resigned from public service with effect from the date immediately before the date he or she assumes office as a member. But on this one, was in something else. The same government, who is putting on
this? Well, you know, this committee is a one-factor committee because everything converges here. Therefore, members are empowered because there is no one member. It's not only the same government, the same cluster. Council administration that is speaking in different tones, singing from the different hymn books on the bench. But something I think that is lawmakers was dealing with it. And I think Mr. Africa has raised an issue that says they look at governance matters, that if you are a member of the DA, if you are serving in the government, in the government of the ANC, to put it blunt, then you are campaigning for a DA as a senior manager there, and you come back, and you have not succeeded. It will mean that the ANC will say no. You are in opposition. But I think it's something that lands will deal with it as we go along. I think let's allow the department then to reform.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure that I have anything else to add, quite frankly, because I think on this issue of having to resign at the point of being on the list, I think what we are saying that we're prepared to engage it and ultimately take you know, obviously by the ruling of the committee. We just think it's our duty to put the pros and cons on the table. Obviously, we are expecting a view right now. But clearly, I think also to agree that ideally we should have resolved this matter before coming in. So I think that matter we will definitely be recognised that. On the issue of the constitutionality, again, this is part of the kind of debate that we're having. We have not necessarily had, let me put it differently, as we're sitting here, we do not have a formal opinion saying that it's unconstitutional. But it's definitely part of the discussions that we're having. So I think Chairperson, we are still open to looking at that. Chairperson, I think the others were views that we expressed. That's what I think you're saying.
Just your ruling, that those opinions, the views. I think are there any issues from the team? So that we don't come from Tuane or Pretoria and say, like, no, you're not given opportunity. I think there's not a good reason that. But having said that, I must give a warning. The African say that in effect, I think it's amendment. One of them, I think, will be on the area of the machines and financially satisfied. But I think it will be around the issue of the ward committee. To say that a policy, there must be time frame for a policy needs to be developed by all councils and then properly provincial or national, so that we are able to check to avoid what has been raised around the funds that are poor, they develop policies that are not helpful in terms of managing the finances. I think that's one thing. The other one is around the issue of the time frame for the municipal. For the end of the in that something like that. But the 1 year thing that you must have not. That will what we think is will be discussed. Of course, this might be a 6 months. And I think we'll be looking at also other things that we think have to be affected, amongst other things. There's an issue where it says that in terms of section 106 of the Social Bank, and NEC has been investigated, either reducing the social and public. And municipality in terms of this, I mean, arriving there. A report
full report must be sent to the Ministry of Finance and for the internal local government. We are saying also the report must come to the NSOP. I think that's because currently the law says when investigation is happening, we are informed. But as to what happens after, we are not informed. Now what happens in practice is that people go in and investigate, they give the report of investigating, as to the outcome, they don't tell them. They tell you when they are intervened. So they know we've investigated, we are intervening now, we're taking the power of the ministry over as a provincial government. It means you have the step of knowing what was the outcome of that investigation. And it's something that I think we have to look at it. Of course, this is just the law. We can't disempower ourselves on the law that is passed around us. In terms of the role of a federal that we play. Now, I think those are the areas that we'll look at those things that maybe were changed. But I like the spirit of saying, which is the true spirit of a revocation. It's a progressive position. A revocation, a progressive position. Who is open minded? Who is prepared to come to be lobbied, to be convinced to engage an idea that you abide by the principles of the collective state. That's the fundamental statement. When you find other people who come in the community, they defend their own beliefs. And they want to rain down to approach the views of the department that they've raised. You engage on these issues, they say, no. And if you say no, this right, you say no, maybe give us time, maybe a day or two. You find that they're still going to contract. They must put over there. They are crazy. Now I'm saying that it's a kind of progressive.
Thank you very much. We'll look at it at home here. Why not? That's a good thing. But we're giving a notice to the department to say that amongst our tasks, the committee, is to look at provincial interests. As what a committee that brings provincial and local government. Meaning, therefore, that in this case, the provincial interests have been protected. That is, must be open process for their constitutional power. And that is depend upon you amend the constitution. And when the constitution has to be amended, fortunately, I'm the co-chair of the Constitutional Review Committee. Therefore, the matter has to come to us to look at it. Therefore, everywhere you go, we find. Thank you very much. The applicant and the case. Is there any word of passing shot that you want to see?
No, sir. Thank you very much, Chairperson. The only question is one of process. I mean, obviously we can be advised after this meeting, but it would also be good just to get some indication of maybe how the committee intends to process this. But for that, that's the only question. So thank you.
Something I think that we communicate on the table, give us a focus, shape the document. Then support yourself in terms of what you think. But we have to collaborate together and take our ability for that.
in consultation. Thank you very much, the team from the CBNG. And thank you very much for coming. And as I said earlier on, we communicate with you of the outcome. We can just take a 5 minute comfort break, take some refreshment of time, and while to allow the team to then come to the public system in the day. I think the minister had that the team is ready. They can quote you from other, when they think that they are here, but they are ready.
Chairperson, I have noted this, but I must say that I'm not disappointed.
Good afternoon. We want to welcome the committee in this special venue, which is a bit not cramped comparatively speaking to the one that we're in. Welcome the minister. Say that we are happy, minister, that you are here to lead your team. And hopefully today we'll be able to finalize the thing so that on the 20th we are able to debate it. And we got a correspondence that says that unfortunately on that day you won't be allowed. You have dedicated the Minister of Provincial and Local Government to debate. Already that correspondence has reached our table. There's some degree of petition from the public system, I could say. Having said that, the other thing that I think we'll talk about is outside, not part of the team. I was talking to my colleague Kalane, where there's a correspondence that comes from one province where there is an issue around the administration. But the statement that was colleague Kalane is it's a chairperson of finance. And I felt that maybe we must with him, together with him, because it was directed to him, talk to you about. To advise to find a solution around that matter. But we're very happy then that we have this meeting and with you. Of course, then we must be dealing with, we're dealing with the bill to try and finalize. Meaning, therefore, that. We must deal with the issue in terms of the responses of the province. Reform right now, we deal with the motion of desirability and then go through the law with an intention of passing the bill if it is possible today. We have heard Minister earlier on that we're dealing with the local government affairs movement. And I think the department came with the hope that the committee will say no, stay over, and so on, and finalize the bill. Which didn't happen, it will undergo its own process. So that we are able to apply our minds and be able to come with quality legislation that even ourselves are contemplated of. Even when we have left this situation, we must be able to look at back to those laws that have been made with pride. And say that we managed to be part of them. Now, having said that, we have managed to receive almost all mandates from all provinces, including KwaZulu-Natal, Mpemba.
Yeah.
KwaZulu-Natal. Because this clause, the KwaZulu-Natal clause, and you know, in the Northwest, the meeting took place 2 days because of KwaZulu-Natal and the Western Cape, and the West, and the Northwest, and the Western Cape. Now, what will allow then is a situation where before we enter into mandate, as we have the political head here, which is not a normal time that we have generally, we hope that is the beginning of good things to come. Good things to come. That we can allow maybe the minister to give an input probably if she so wishes before we enter into the formal processes and so on that have to be followed. Over to you, Minister.
Thanks very, very much, Chairperson, honourable members, and all officials or technical experts who are present here today. I do want to express my appreciation for this opportunity and also state that I appreciate the fact that you made reference to the letter that relates to the commitment with the OECD on anti-corruption, which I indicated actually conflicts with the date that the legislation will come before the NCOP. We had hoped that our legislation would have been tabled earlier, but regrettably that was not to be. But we appreciate the commitment of Parliament to ensure that we pass sound legislation, and hence felt that we do need to subject ourselves to a process of engagement by the provinces. I'd also want to reiterate what you raised, that in essence we're meeting here because of what was seen as KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo, and it now seems to have become a Gauteng issue instead. You know, Chairperson, and I'm sure you have nothing to do with that particular aspect whatsoever. The two of us are merely tenants in Gauteng province, so we really won't take ownership of that. But here we are, and we are engaging. Before I go into aspects of this bill itself, I just want to reflect on two matters that you had raised. The first thing I do want to say, I have had a discussion with Honourable Khalane on the matter at hand, and we have resolved the process that we take it forward, and I'm sure that will be communicated to you, and you will be engaged in that process most likely. We felt that we needed to ensure that there was an engagement of all stakeholders in order to avoid ourselves being drawn into a rather problematic situation. The second issue is, I heard you loudly and clearly when you dealt with the previous draft legislation, and you said some come before the committee and try to ram down what they've been given by their bosses. Down the throats of the members of the NCOP. Now, I want to assure you that we don't intend ramming down using any form of traditional accoutrements, but we will rather engage in order to ensure that we persuade each other that we have common ground on issues. The second matter that one picked up at the last meeting is that the Honourable Member reflected on disparities in remuneration, and he did not refer to the public service and local government at all, but reflected on disparities in remuneration between certain municipal municipal managers and the president and so on. Just a few comments on that. You are aware that we intend coming with a single public service act next year, and as we do so, if we think that we've had debate on the public service amendment bill, I want to just say, if I can use a cliche, you ain't seen nothing yet, because I think we're going to have a lot of engagement there. But I think it's appropriate to say that remuneration, benefits and tools of trade of our legislators is not within the purview of the executive or the administration. According to Act of Parliament, the remuneration of political office bearers are being dealt with at the level of a commission and the Musenneke Commission. So we'd really not be able to reflect on the differences in remuneration between public political office bearers and the administration itself. But I think at a future point we will be able to reflect on very interesting research that we will do as part of the single public service, reflecting on remuneration trends, etc., between local government and the public service. And we have just completed a study now looking at remuneration of the senior management service and comparing that to the private sector. So I'm just saying that in terms of that particular area we'd look at. But I want to conclude by saying that I strongly hold the view that, you know, it's not just our salaries and perks that reflects the respect that we give and earning society, but it's also the way in which we carry ourselves, and hence I would argue that in the public service itself, there is a need for public servants to ensure that they at all times retain the trust of the public in order to ensure the trust of that the trust of government grows rather than declines. And also there's a need for professionalism in the public service, because that's where and how I believe that public servants will be able to gain trust, enforce trust, retain trust, claim it, build it. So just my views, and I know this is unsolicited views at this point in time. I then want to go on to the bill itself and do a very brief introduction of this. And state that I specifically came because I was aware that I would be absent next week, and I felt that I needed to reflect our commitment to this legislation, to the committee, and also the seriousness with which we treat the committee. And indeed, Chairperson, I hope that with adequate forenotice, and if the meetings take place this time of the day, I'll definitely be able to participate. I'll do so as we take the single public service forward. However, if you would have it either on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday morning, it's unlikely that one is able to participate due to cabinet and cabinet committee commitments. So it's not out of disrespect to Parliament in any way, but rather other commitments. Just as I would say, going into this particular legislation, this is in essence simply to ensure that we make an amendment to the Public Service Act. In the interim, until we have the single public service legislation on the table, which is much more comprehensive, quite far-reaching, and has major implications for the public service as a whole. I would argue, Chairperson, that when we look at the Single Public Service Act, and I'm doing this to preempt the debate from members who may be thinking they should debate as though they're dealing with the Single Public Service, that that I believe is going to be the largest transformative piece of legislation that we would have seen post-1994, and the initial legislation that has come into being that has contributed to our ensuring that we give credence to the founding provision of one sovereign democratic state that's founded on very specific values. So having said that, this particular legislation has come about in view of limitations that we've experienced in practice. So we're no longer at the conceptual stage where we're anticipating what we would find in practice, but we've been through 13 years. We've confronted particular realities. We've put in place conventions to deal with these realities. And we now want to ensure that we put that in law in order that it is binding to the public service itself. Now, in so doing, we are also dealing with some issues that are quite emotive insofar as it relates to public servants, and one such was a debate that started earlier in the previous item on the municipal the Municipal Services Amendment Bill that came up as in the local government legislation that came up earlier, where the whole question of the involvement of public servants as councillors is quite a serious issue. And we have, looking at what the practice has been with past elections, looked at how we would give effect to this in this Act. And I think we should bear in mind that this is based on practice in recent times and also ensuring that it is aligned constitutionally. Having said that, however, we are aware that there is the legislation that you've had before you. There's also a report on an investigation into the management, that called the management of public servants, in terms of prevailing provisions who are elected at municipal councils in Limpopo and Western Cape provinces, close quote. This study was completed in August 2007 by the Public Service Commission, and they had recently tabled it before Parliament. And in that, they argue very strongly for exclusion of public servants from serving in political positions or being elected as both full-time and part-time municipal councillors. Our approach here is, let's put in place something for the interim. These issues, we believe, should be dealt with in much greater depth in the single public service legislation that comes before us. It will allow us the opportunity for quite rigorous and thoroughgoing engagement, and we will be able to take on board the research done by the Public Service Commission that came post the current legislation we have before us. So I thought that I would just raise that. I also, Chairperson, would like to say that just in passing, before I hand over to Advocate MP Van Schoor, who is well known to you, as well as colleague Alvey, who is also well known to you in this committee. I think you've engaged consistently and agreed on a number of issues and also exchanged wise words on a number of issues. So before I hand over, I also want to state that one of the provinces actually picked up certain discrepancies that crept in and weren't necessarily picked up in Parliament around cross-referencing and so on. And we believe that these are issues that should just be corrected as a matter of course. We know that there have been instances, and we don't want to lay blame, but where issues have gone to printers and you have gremlins creeping into the system, and we'd like to have a situation that we correct that without having to see that as an amendment, but rather as serve as a correction. But these will be dealt with by the technical teams. So I think on that note, Chairperson, I'd want to say that we can then immediately, depending on how you'd want to take this forward, engage with the substantive issues that have been raised by the respective provinces. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Well, we highly appreciate the input. And of course, the understanding that if we schedule meetings on Thursdays afternoons, the possibility of you coming is quite great, or maybe Friday morning. Quite great. Therefore, it means in our schedule was excluded Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and the morning of Thursday. Then these other available times.
You know, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday afternoon is also fine with me.
Yes, we'll look at that. I think the subscribers, the people who are subscribed, subscribers, have noted those points, so that when we draft the program, we'll take that into account when we deal with that. Thank you very much, Minister. Then I think then we have to go to, there are two things I think that we must handle. The first one I think is to get the latest in terms of provincial input, for the final mandate. But at the same time, we would be happy to get the response of the department in relation to the deliberation that took place and that was sent to them, in terms of their views on those issues. And meaning that will touch on two issues, recent and the latest in terms of provincial views, and also the earlier deliberations that took place. They'll touch on those to say what are the views of the department. Now, it means then I must start with, in terms of getting the final mandate, with Mr. Webb, sir?
Sorry, Jay, I just want to clarify something. Gauteng legislature's final voting mandate, they had certain queries on certain things which they maintain. I haven't gone through them yet, but they say, for instance, clause 4, they say there, this is a substantive issue. And somewhere else they say a substantive issue. But then at the end they say the province votes in favour. Aren't they wanting to have clarification on it?
No, no, we'll come there, Mr. West. In fact, let's start now with the Eastern Cape. To get the views of the Eastern Cape.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Eastern Cape engaged very extensively on the bill, and by and large the Eastern Cape supports the bill, save to say, or subject to the amendment of section 7.3d of clause 9 of the bill. 7.3, that section is actually saying the head of a provincial administration, the office of a premier, shall in respect of a provincial department of the relevant province exercise no power or perform no duty which is entrusted or assigned by or under this act or any other law to the head of the provincial department. Yet the Eastern Cape is saying it should be that clause should allow the head of the office of the premier powers over the heads of a provincial department on transversal matters or overarching matters and matters of provincial importance. That is, matters that would, for example, affect more than one department. Then the head of the administration, that is, that would be the DG, should have a say or powers to deal with those matters. That is the only amendment that the Eastern Cape would like effected. But by and large, the Eastern Cape supports the deal.
Thank you very much. I must tell you, Minister, who, because you're not present in the Department of the meeting, the Eastern Cape, as they are saying, they engage here very, very strongly, including this issue, because you can see it's an issue that is quite pertinent in the province. Even the special advisor, it was a matter that they raised quite strongly. And I think we've heard the views of the Eastern Cape. Then we come to the Free State. Free State.
Thanks, Chair. as you no doubt know, I presented the bill to the committee at the Free State Legislature, and then subsequent to that, I didn't have very much time to go with it in great detail, but then they had three public hearings in various places, one being Sasselburg in the Free State, and then they sent us this negotiating mandate with one or two queries, but subsequent to that, we have received their final mandate. The final mandate is here, the Free State Legislature in favor of the bill.
Thank you very much, Free State. Then we go to Gauteng. Flood.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as though I could see that I am under fire here, sir. Chairperson, if I may address the House on the issue of the Gauteng mandate. Chairperson, when this bill was introduced, bear in mind, sir, the report that I'm giving is it's a verbal report. It is not supported by any documentation from the province to substantiate of what I am saying. I have just phoned the province now when I was outside to find out what actually led to this miscarriage of our communication. Now, the verbal report I got is that on the first hearing, which was supposed to have the committee should have had, the communication which was communicated to the province was that the department did not attend the meeting. As a result thereof, the committee did not sit. And however, it was then communicated to them that the supposedly negotiating mandate, which was supposed to have taken place, they held the view that it was communicated to them that the 13th of this month, it will be then the negotiating mandate. However, all these things have been happening through SMS and telephone and all that stuff. And therefore, they said, when I was speaking to the legal advisor, Ms. Manana, said that they were only told that today is the final mandate. The committee itself has not sat to discuss the issue. The matter was referred to the ad hoc committee. The reason being that the court is not signed by the highest authority in the province. I would probably read on page 3.2, views from the provincial executive. In the compliance with the requirements of Gauteng Provincial Legislative Standing Rules 235 sub 4 and sub 8, noting that the bill seeks to deal with the public service administration matters which cut across all provincial government departments, the committee considered it logical to invite the consolidated executive views through the Premier's office, which views will respond to the socio-economic as well as the financial implication of the bill on the provincial administration and so far as the bill is concerned. The executive supports the principle of the bill. However, some of the details of the bill require attention of from a legal, constitutional, and administrative law, respectively. It is on this basis, sir, that this bill was then sent to the ad hoc committee that has actually had gone through, solicit all the views, and to find out whatever they wanted to achieve. And finally, when they were now under pressure that today is the final mandate, they thought it wise that then the report that was actually tabled by the ad hoc committee should be the one that could be sent to the select committee and see how what wisdom can we solicit from the other provinces, whether they will accept our supporting of the bill in the absence of the endorsement of the premier or the sitting of the House, because in no way that we can get this today. But however, it is envisaged that as soon as they find an earliest opportunity, then the House would send us that kind of a mandate. Probably if the bill has been debated, that mandate, which will be signed by the authority of that institution, would have been sorted. Now, I place this before you, sir, and probably I'll be guided by the decision of the committee, whether there we support the bill with those substantive issues that we have raised, and with the dilemma that also the province had in the not having probably had an opportunity to be briefed, and also had an opportunity to have a negotiating mandate, because all the views that we would have probably listed in the negotiating mandate, we would have probably tried to study the calls to other provinces and lobby them and see whether they would support us. Now, because it's a final mandate, sir, I'm at your mercy. Thank you.
Thank you, Swan. Well, I think let's agree that the views expressed, or the views of an official, as you said, by the student official, I was the person who presented the bill. And I want to share with this meeting that when I presented the bill, the legislature made very good sound amendments to the bill during the discussion, and there were public hearings and so on. But as to where they disappeared, these amendments, nobody knows. Subsequent to that, the meeting then will remember that, having said, we don't have any views in the negotiating mandate. Will we await the executive to say what are the views? And it's exactly what is actually said here. As they are saying themselves that these are the views of the executive from the state law advisor in the process, what they think. Which then is a route that they took, because they said, as a legislature, we don't have views. We'll await the executive to say what are its views. And this is what actually said. To me, I think this story of telling the process and so on is just a cover up, really, to be honest. It's not a substantial thing, because they are confirming what they told us, that in written form, in the negotiated mandate, that will present executive views in the final mandate. Now, my ruling then would be that to the meeting, I think let's get to the substance of what they are raising. But I think the part is important, that the department may be responsible for the substance, whether the substance makes sense and so on, we engage on that. And we say that this is still a transition, because even if you look at the end of the page 7 of the present, they say the ad hoc committee recommends, which is a structure that has been dealing with the bill. What is missing in this submission is that it is not signed by the speaker as the new mandating procedures act is saying. So probably it's a transition, because the law was passed about 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago. Maybe the housing committee still under question. It's a transition that they are going to adapt to things in fast. And but they were kept informed all the time. To me, I think the ruling is that let's engage on the substance and hear what are the issues on the substance, so that we take it from there. That's the ruling that I'm presenting. Can we go then to KZN?
Thank you, Chairperson, and I'm glad that KwaZulu-Natal has already started to implement the mandating procedures of provinces act, the one we have passed last week, I would before last. So KwaZulu-Natal is adhering to that act. They are already using it. And Chairperson, maybe before I read what KwaZulu-Natal is saying, maybe we need to tighten up this thing of having a final mandate being a negotiating mandate. Because most of the provinces here, in the final mandate, they're still amending. We support, provided that is amending.
which were passed long ago when we were given the negotiating mandate. But we are still continuing with the negotiating mandate, because now it's confusing. You don't know whether you support provided it's accepted or what you are amending. So maybe we have to be aware of that next time we adhere to the act, that a final mandate is just yes or no. No amendment. Having said that, Chairperson, KwaZulu-Natal is very KwaZulu-Natal is mandating
Chairperson, can't we deal with this part first? Before we go to KwaZulu-Natal.
No, because he
is debating our mandate.
I'm not debating. No, we'll come to that.
Let's allow all processes.
We'll come to that.
I was passing by anyway. Sir, you should have said he's out of order, because he should deal with KwaZulu-Natal.
Point is, that's what I'm doing. KwaZulu-Natal, Chairperson, it has resolved to mandate the delegation to vote in favor of the Public Service Amendment Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mabundulu. Well, you know, the meeting took place because of KwaZulu-Natal. You know, there's something that they call in Zulu, Matuksigas. You show it that something big is coming. You are waiting for something big to come. Nothing comes. Probably, I think it's an implementation of this mandate to say, if you have forgone the negotiating mandate, forget it. On the final, you say that you say, I support, I don't. I think they're implementing that as is. and prepare the ground. Well, thank you very much, Mpemba, for that. We are happy that we have the final mandate from KwaZulu-Natal. Then we'll move then to Mpumalanga. Limpopo. Oh. There's...
No, thanks, FSM, for the opportunity. Before I go straight to our mandate, maybe to check the president, because I want to move and to leave things hanging. During the stage where we were dealing with negotiating mandate, we raised a concern where we don't know, maybe it's because there was a miscommunication, I don't know. During that stage, the department was not here. Another committee, we made proposals to make some amendments. So I'm looking around to see where are those amendments from the department, because the federal advisor, unfortunately, was there. We said I'll send in for the department, which was not present. The question we don't know is why the department was not there. Because it would be difficult for us because my province, as you remember, they supported the deal, but they wanted has to be specific on the participation of officials in terms of the item we debated earlier on, for them being elected public reps. When are they supposed to resign? Because my province said they must have resigned. They might have deemed to have resigned immediately. So we made the all provinces during the negotiating mandate agreed on this particular clause. But I don't see an amendment to that effect before us. So it's difficult for me to say my province supports it before the department circulated or agreed as a committee chairperson on that day. Because I know we'll agree on that one, Chen. But my province, represented by yours truly, as always, the peaceful province of Limpopo, they are supporting the bill, Chen, knowing that they are going to get joy on the proposal they made, I submit.
Thank you, Mbana. Then let's move to Mpumalanga.
Thank you, Chairperson. A comment by the public.
the input made by the stakeholder took place in a very constructive and informative manner. They were happy. Mpumalanga, the permanent delegate representing the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces, confer with authority to vote in favor of the deal. Thank you, Chairperson.
With authority, Munyana? Yeah. Then we go to the north, Northern Cape. Northern Cape. Who can read it on yourself? This is struggling.
Yeah, Chair. On the Northern Cape mandate, Chair, the committee adopted the final mandate, duly signed by the chairperson of the committee. I'm reading item 5, Chair. In terms of section 65 of the Constitution, the House confers authority on the head of the delegation to the NCOP to vote in favor of the Public Service Administration Amendment B, that of this year, to be signed by the acting speaker. They supported it.
Thank you very much, Mrena. Then we go to the Northwest. But how many Northwest, my Jews? Who's it in, my
Well, that's the power that's been conferred to me. Now I will have to add to that. The Northwest Province Legislature in the Public Service Administration Bill, the information contained, it says, kindly be informed that the Premier stroke Legislature Committee in the Northwest Province Legislature is unable to submit the negotiating mandate, final mandate, due to the fact that the committee have not met and discussed the bid. I hope you'll find this in order. Sincerely yours, the Honorable D. Valoy, the Chairperson and in Premier's office.
It was KwaZulu-Natal amongst others, but the Northwest amongst others. That made us submit because the permanent delegate told us that they briefed the legislature due to their own internal arrangement late, but then they must be accorded an opportunity that we will meet on Thursday in the afternoon. And we duly considered. Unfortunately, I think the internal dynamics made us still raging on. That's why they could not meet as a committee. I think let's take it like that and be able to move forward. Then we come to the what part? To the Western Cape. The last one. Of what was complete? Now we can do Western Cape as well.
Yeah, this is the mandate from the Western Cape. It reads as thus: final mandate of Western Cape Provincial Parliament on the Public Service Amendment Bill, in bracket B31B-2006. In brackets NCOP, as resolved by the House on the 13th of November 2007, the Western Cape Provincial Parliament, having considered the subject of the Public Service Amendment Bill, in brackets those NCOP, referred to the Provincial Parliament in terms of the rules of the National Council of Provinces, begs to report that it confers on the Western Cape delegation in the NCOP the authority to support the bill
without amendment, signed by the NFL speaker, 13 November 2007.
Thank you very much, because it's among the provinces also that requested that we meet today, because they'll be able to. Clearly, Mren, I think we still have to, maybe we still have to make a regulation for the mandating act, because, or maybe we, the effect went to the date for the implementation of the act that we passed is still coming. It's not yet been signed. Therefore, the five people are quoting, therefore it means Mpemba is quite fast in moving according to the law that is not signed and implementing it. And Mr. Rosa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, you often say to us as a committee, we must do things the right way. Now, unfortunately today, we are not doing things the right way. And I would like you now to address us on this. What are we going to do with Gauteng? We cannot hide behind dates, Chairperson. You know, we often say they don't take the NCOP seriously. And in all seriousness, in many instances, it might be our own fault that they don't take us seriously.
Thank you very much, Mr. Leroux.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, probably one if could note the abnormalities on this thing, and I'm sure that's the reason why my colleague there, Darren Webb, has actually wanted to speak on behalf of Gauteng. I see the covering letter from Free State is attached here. I don't know what's going on here. Chairperson, allow me to respond to the issues that we do things the right way. I concur with that, and I fully agree that's the way we should go. And I'm happy that Mr. Ndulu says that his province has actually adhered to what it requires by whatever law that has not probably been implemented. This is an incident that happened yesterday. The KZN came with a mandate that they were actually going to negotiate. And I kicked it out. And I said, if your mandate says you support provided we do this, you're not going to do that. You either give us a mandate that you don't, or you do. And on that score, as they look at my mandate, it was not signed. They did not hesitate. They come to say, Gauteng, get out. You're not even going to vote. The only thing that saved my skin is that I have placed my predicament. If you give me time now to go out and phone my province, they would sign the covering letter that would have been signed by the premier, or the presiding officer would have been mandated by the premier, and I can present that to you during the course of the day. Or else, if you check me all out, then I don't have a mandate to vote, even on the voting day, because it's a section 55. And what it also the law requires that it should be six provinces before we read the motion of desirability that we actually we confirm it. They were in the dilemma because they were not quite sure how many provinces were supporting. Then I requested the mercy of the chairperson, and then I went out and I was promised that. And when Comrade Manana went to the red flame, whoever, and the covering letter was then signed. I presented to the committee, and the six were then it was. Now, can we check on the same basis that how many of the provinces are actually conferring on this? And on the basis of that, because let me say to you, sir, the mandate given, whoever is given, It does not put any red tape or anything attached to it. It says the final voting position of the committee, of the other committee, recommends that the House confer authority in terms of Section 65 of the Constitution of the Constitution on the Gauteng provincial delegates to the National Council of Provinces. It is even flagged to vote in favor of the Public Service Amendment Bill. It does not say provided those suggestion or proposal if they are actually being agreed to. It is no strings attached. Now, the same thing, yes, I don't want to seem wrong. If the committee allows me that I pursue the matter because I pursue the matter by tomorrow, I would probably have the required signed document before this committee or wherever it would be.
Chairperson, I don't want to be rude to my two colleagues, but I think they're out of order. In terms of the procedure of how we deal with the final mandate, Chair, what we're supposed to do now, Chair, is for us to now have a discussion on the proposed amendments if they are before us, as proposed in the last meeting. That's the first thing. Secondly, we are supposed to engage mandates from each province alphabetically, from the Eastern Cape. We're supposed to engage the mandate from Eastern Cape and deal with it. Then Gauteng is jumping the queue. I don't know where they come from. They just jump into the queue, and we're supposed to deal with Eastern Cape, we say it in that order, until we reach them. But I can see they're in a hurry to engage us, Chair. But I think my two colleagues are out of order, Chair. Just as I said today, you are lenient. And the fact we're enjoying it, you know. But they were out of order, Chair. If we can go back to order and do our business. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mrana. Well, you know, sometimes if you chair with an iron fist, people feel that you are not a good chair. Sometimes you must just leave things loose and be able to maneuver as you can. But what is interesting about my colleague from Gauteng is that he's shooting himself in his own foot by the way he raises things. But it's fine. I think then we probably, the issues have been raised from the Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape raised an issue which feels that we must be able to engage with on. Then I would request that the department and the response to that then remove it in that order.
Thanks, Chair. The department will follow the minister if there's anything to add. I do want to say that the Eastern Cape very clearly raises legitimate concerns that had been in place over a period of time around the role of provincial directors general vis-a-vis heads of department in provinces. But if you look at the legislation itself, and we would beg the Eastern Cape to look at it more closely, and particularly when looking at page 10, 9, section 7, C, Roman numeral 2 in particular, It very clearly says if you go to C at the top, it says, in addition of any power or duty entrusted or assigned by or under this Act or any other law to the head of a provincial administration, the office of the Premier, the said head shall. And Roman numeral 2 says, subject to sections 852C and 1252E of the Constitution, be responsible for intergovernmental relations on an administrative level between the relevant province and other provinces, as well as the national departments and national government components, and for the intra-governmental cooperation between the relevant Office of the Premier and the various provincial departments and provincial government components, including the coordination of their actions and legislation. Now, if you cross-refer in term and go to page 6, section 3.1, section 3.2, it indicates the minister shall give effect to subsection 1 by making regulations, determinations and directives, and by performing any other acts provided for in this act. So we believe that this adequately deals with the concerns that's raised from the Eastern Cape, and I once again want to say these concerns were indeed valid when you looked at the public service regulations that actually reviewed the role and function of provincial DGs, but this is dealt with. I'm not sure, MTN Alva, if there's anything else you would add to that. Yeah.
Just very briefly, I think the particular subsection that's referred to by the Eastern Cape is the one that's saying that Office of the Premier DG shouldn't exercise powers allocated to a provincial head of department. But it's powers that officers given to, for instance, the MEC in relation to particularly HR matters in terms of the Act and regulations. So they run their own department. So I think one shouldn't interpret that section too narrowly. It doesn't obviously deal with the powers of the Office of the Premier. That's the clause that the Minister referred to outlines the specific powers of the Office of the DG of the Office of the Premier, which is in addition to his own the powers in relation to as dealing with the Office of the Premier as a normal department. They all have all those powers, then also those that the Minister highlighted being the Secretary of the Provincial Cabinet, and then also these intergovernmental and intergovernmental functions. And then the last one is also power for them to give strategic direction on the whole range of HR matters that the Minister referred to, but yeah, it's in section 3.1 in the province. So I think that it's captured the, our concern is with the formulation. I think it's too vague. We have to say overarching in relation to what, because we're dealing with governance and HR legislation in essence here, and more so in relation to HR and organizational matters, what particular powers we should give to the DG. Because there is particular powers given to the Premier in terms of the act as the Premier and not as the executive authority. And the Premier can delegate those powers to the DG of the province if it seems necessary to be done.
That's a view. I think maybe before Smiley comes, because this matter we discussed it extensively, as to say, is it possible, maybe through your experience, Minister, that in a national legislation you can allocate powers and functions? Because in our understanding, provinces differ. Let's take the case, I mean, with the example about housing. Housing that the employment, the recruitment, and the payment are done by what is called Housing Shared Service Center. Now, you might find that other provinces, things are different and so on. Is it possible that you can do that? Because I think it helps a great deal that in ourselves, the people who are passing the law, we can, because people configure things depending on their own circumstances that are prevailing at that level. Except things that are defined in terms of the local government, the act that was part of the local government around intergovernmental relations and so on, where you find that a premier is expected to coordinate the mayors and so on. Therefore, the DG must play a secretarial role and give support capacity with a technical level with the counterparts of municipal managers at that level. Now, in which the other one is here is defined on what is to be done. Now, I think for charity people, even for ourselves, it's important to make that touch base, because what exploit the fact that we're here.
Smart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wish to draw the in our focus that we are dealing with the final mandate. There were proposals made by Gauteng, which I did not read, simply because if we have had that opportunity,
well, I've ruled on that matter. Unless you are saying the chair mustn't rule. I made a ruling on the Gauteng. Then I think let's stick to that ruling of the chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, but I highlighted this, put it in this context, sir, that we are dealing with the final mandate, sir. Whatever has been suggested, sir, other provinces have had their mandate without amendment. If we would bring new amendment, if we accept what the Eastern Cape is saying, then we have been prejudiced those provinces that have not dealt with those suggestions. And therefore, it would compromise the mandate of those provinces that say without mandate, if we are now going to engage in the watchmen on proposals at this stage, sir.
Yeah, thank you. I want to get a response from the department. As I just said, that we are fortunate that the head of the department, the postal head, in our meeting, is that the issue that was raised in a previous meeting, as I said, the department was not there. We wanted just to check the linkage or see if there will be any synergy between the head of the government component who reports, because of this current arrangement, the head of the component reports directly to the minister. And there is this delivery service unit that will be established in all our provinces. Now, you are also having the head of a particular department. Just to check if there will be any synergy among the three units, that is the government components, the service delivery units, and the head of that particular department. Because that's what I wanted to just check as to what would be the arrangement there, because some provinces like the Eastern Cape, you remember, from the Eastern Cape. No. The special delegate was here. She has an issue that, exactly what is raised by Honorable Manus, what will be the role of the head of the DG in the province, because it seems as if their powers have been taken. If that can be clarified. Thank you.
What's your view on that matter? Because Malu can take a rigid view of this thing, but I think it's the first time in close to 4 years that we have a minister discussing the deal. And I think with that opportunity, you can't just leave it this and take a rigid approach on issues. Because we must be able to even ourselves going to debate this deal there, here and so on. If we can solicit some information and ideas from her, as the person who learned from the policy level this issue, it helps a great deal. Minister, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I note the questions that have been raised. And let me just give a little bit of a context, and I'll share it politically as well. This particular legislation was much discussed and debated, and we actually, whilst it was being discussed at the level of the executive, engaged with a number of stakeholders, as well outside stakeholders, on this legislation. I'd want to add, particularly if we look at the issue of government components, this was particularly a politically charged area. We actually had another term at that point in time, but following debate, we renamed it. And we felt that our inputs that was, the inputs that were made, we felt strengthened the legislation as that. Now, in terms of some of the discussions at that particular point in time, what we were very clear on, well, let me separate the discussions. I'm just for the benefit of the committee saying that we also had a number of interactions with a range of stakeholders. And if required, I don't have a quarrel to share who those stakeholders were, in order to ensure that this legislation will indeed facilitate more effective service delivery, provision of service delivery from, based on our experience. A second point that came up, and this relates again to the issue of government components as well as specialized service delivery units within departments. If you check the number of agencies that have been set up, particularly since 1994, there's been a whole range of agencies that have been set up that is quite at the arm's length of the executive authorities, including these DGs you're talking about, whether provincially or nationally, in terms of their accountability. And we felt that there was a whole plethora of agencies set up, and we said there's a need to review that. And in the interim, since this cabinet, we had reviewed this, particularly over the last 3 to 5 years. We put in place a convention where there is a panel that consists of the Department of Public Service and National Treasury that actually needs to give a nod on the setting up of agencies. And part of this was to control the setting up of this plethora of agencies. I'm sorry that I'm giving this preamble. It's just to share some of this information. We thought that there is a need to, if one can call it, sort of reel in agencies. But on the other hand, you do need a vehicle that will allow the provision of services in a more speedy way, probably, with less of the bureaucracy that you have in a normal government department. And hence the whole issue of a government component as well as a specialized service delivery unit came to the fore. The question is, do you then want it to go through the normal bureaucracy in a manner that could actually create bottlenecks when you don't want bottlenecks? And we said that in instances, we agreed, we said, look, the Director General is, of course, the first advisor for the minister, but you would want to have a situation where this structure, much as it may be accountable, there must also be a direct link with the executive, with your minister, with your MEC, etc. Now, in the provinces, you do have the provincial DG. There is nothing that stops a delegation of authority that involves them. So I think we should see that as trying to ensure that we do have a vehicle that is positive in terms of the provision of CD services whilst maintaining the accountability required. I should say that we said there is a role for the Directors General as well as the role for the Executive Authority, but what is required is that the Executive Authority must have oversight of these structures, but will, as and where required, delegate. We are not excluding the provincial DGs, and I think we must understand we're talking about one government, and we need to look at how the interface can be facilitated. We think that the current the legislation as stands at the moment, as MPR explained, tries to deal with this, because through the reference to intergovernmental cooperation, it facilitates that. I mean, it means that there is a role for the head of the, for the direct provincial director general. And this legislation also accommodates the flexibility that the chairperson refers to. Because we've moved away from the situation where we are saying that we take a very narrow one-size-fits-all approach. You do need to have flexibility, in order to provide for different vehicles in service delivery that includes the kind of shared services model, bearing in mind that you will probably have either CEO or sort of head of department of that particular facility, but it doesn't stop the interface that's required with the provincial DG. I think maybe that's, you know, also, yeah, no, I think that broadly gives the background. I hope it in broad terms deals with some of the challenges that have been raised. But I do want to say that the fears that the Eastern Cape has is covered. The fears that the committee had, which I believe is absolutely valid, should bear in mind that we have this in place when we have a clearly decentralized framework in terms of human resources. But what we are dealing with here now is the whole question of organizational structures and so on. So we wanted to, in the legislation, accommodate permutations that would allow for a flexible approach to the configuration of government as well. Thanks.
Well, I think the response has been given that this thing, man, is more allowing the flexibility so that you don't rely on one force. Because sometimes, if you listen to Minister Balfour when he was presenting, he says, I call any official, I get work from any official and from my department. In terms of what is required, you're supposed to ask the head of department, the HOD, which is a DG, to go and ask the DDG. The DDG asks the chief director. The chief director asks the director. Maybe the major must be dealt with the deputy director. Now, that's like to find that this thing takes time and so on and irritate. Yeah, I think the intention is to have the regime that the CEO or head of a component can relate to the executive authority on any matter. And the DG, I mean the head of department, can't say, no, you are breaking protocol. Why do you relate to the head of the component direct? You're supposed to relate via me. Then that's where you find that creates problems in terms of. So, Manu.
I just want to clarify that the rationale for the Eastern Cape to have included this was, one, we say we are a unitary state. Secondly, there are situations where the head of the administration feels that something wrong is happening in that department. And the head of that department says, you can't trespass here. He's the head of the administration. He sees that there's something wrong is happening there. There's something not happening there, which is supposed to happen. And then this head of department says, you will be trespassing. That was the rationale. And the minister is actually answering it when he's pointing out that intergovernmental cooperation. And I think we should be content with that. But I wanted to mention the fact that the rationale for it was the unitariness of the state and the fact that there are situations where there are stubborn heads of departments who will say, you enter nowhere.
Thank you very much, Romania. Well, you show a flexibility and a progressiveness that you can be persuaded and look at what issues are contained there, which is quite nice. It takes a forward. Then we go to the frequency disagreed. There's nothing to talk about at that level. We engage on the substance of housing on issues that were raised. Minister?
Yes, we'll go into halting, but I want to start out by saying, and you can strike me out of order, Chairperson, that we actually communicated with the executing authorities across government to ask for submission when it was dealt with at the level of the executive before this came to Parliament. We got no input from the province. I think also it's a bit unfortunate because many of these issues we could quite easily have resolved beforehand because some of it requires clarity. There's one area where we may ask the state law advisor to just provide some advice on Nisandre, the state law advisor. I'm looking at your resource person, sorry, your technical expert, but the state law advisor to deal with this. So I've immediately get MP and Alway to go through it, because I believe that many of these issues we can dispense with quite easily, because we are not want to be seen to be obstructive about it. But I think it's a bit unfortunate it's taken this approach, but Gauteng has probably been going through self-flagellation a little bit now. So we declare, yeah, MP, with your permission.
If we allow this process, I think it would be out of order, Chair. The minister is right, Chair. I mean, this stage is for us to engage on the issues that were raised during the negotiation mandate. Any clarity must be that of issues that were raised during that stage. These are new issues, and they came when the train is gone. Unfortunately, we can't engage on those. So, other than us wasting the time of our officials and even for ourselves, Chair, I think that's part of how they, because they agree. And those are new issues. They came after that stage of them being debated at past, with due respect. But for information's sake, we can allow the officials to just talk to us. But if one to deal the bill, I mean, the order is that those issues, unfortunately, they've missed the timeline.
How long is it going to take him to the phone?
It's quite technical, Chair, because it's going to take some time to take this through. We went through, unfortunately, we only also received this quite shortly before the committee meeting, but I think at least 20 minutes or better.
Can we agree that, I think, for information, you put them in writing, before in writing, then we dispense with this? Because in any way, they're not going to be assisting us in this process. I think we put them in writing, you send them to us, and so on, we can convey that to them, and that's it, for information purposes. Then we go to Mpemba. Mpemba is a great.
We must come. Yeah.
Mbrena, you raised an issue. Lea Makanzela, would you?
Yeah, that was raised at a meeting of officials participating. When are they supposed to have, seem to have resigned and stuff? We made a concrete proposal in the last meeting, Chair. I wonder if that proposal is in front of us or not. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, no, I think we discussed in the last meeting. The agreement was that we, Chumpema, now felt very strong with these matters, are matters that can be dealt with in a substantial way, because the financial implications, the whole thing, because people, when they're elected, you must give a notice. Would you know, you are in office now. When the time comes, this thing of people being in office, getting two salaries from government, is going to come an end at some point. So that people adjust their budgets. Not really to cut the budgets of people, and so, because they rely on that income. And we said now, in the new dispensation that is being engaged upon, which hopefully is going to, these things are going to pass, I think all of them, without exception, but 2008, hopefully, the substantial ones. Therefore, in that respect, you are able then to look at maybe the implementation of those deals and particular those particular clauses. Maybe to say that in the new local government council, in the new political structure, this is going to be required. Even at a national and provincial level, 2009, this thing is effective. Maybe we find that local government, 2011, this is effective. So that people can be, those are huge funding, who are relying on this budget to be able to execute the sentence. And I think that's what we raised in the meeting when Mpemba was feeling very strong about it. Maybe, do you want to touch on the
minute? Yeah, Chairperson, just on this, you know, the legislation before us is very clear when the person must stop working in when appointed at full time. I mean, it's quite clear when that should happen. For those who are part-time, I do want to state it's quite unequivocal in government that if you would be remunerated for any other work, you've got to apply for permission to the executing authority. Anyone who does not apply is in contravention of the Act, current Public Service Act, as well as the Code. and can be hired as a result. There's no question about it. And here, in terms of, we know in terms of declarations, and I'm sure you're going to engage with that at some point in time, there is, well, let me deal with the easier thing. Where you double dip, I mean, we do have information management systems, and we need to ensure that we do check and see whether there are people who are salaried elsewhere. And that is actually part of a monitoring responsibility that needs to be performed. So on the double dipping issue, I want to say there's no question that we need to ensure that we do our work as government to be able to verify where there may be instances where people are being employed and get remuneration elsewhere without permission. But there is also the other broader issue where I think we're going to resolve this in a lot more detail through the Single Public Service Act, because there is a bit of a groundswell at this point in time that says review and maybe that part-time employees should not serve. I think particularly what is particularly a thorny issue in Limpopo is the issue of senior management, the senior managers who are serving as part-time counselors. This is a particularly problematic situation there, and we do need to resolve it. But I think in this instance, what we are putting in the law is what we've had to ensure around election times, that we send out, what's this thing called, circular, to actually indicate what the practice is. And we're simply wanting to capture that in law at this point in time, in line with what the Constitution states, but I think we need a more detailed engagement. I hope that suffices.
It means then, Minister, you are saying that people who are counselors, which is happening in Limpopo, who are teachers, with the vein, are those. They are counselors, they are teachers. They are elected there. Once this law is passed, what happens to those people?
Well, permanent counsellors in any case cannot serve in another position at this point, full-time counsellors. It's part-time counsellors that we're talking about. And in this instance, it makes provision for part-time counsellors to continue, but say that they need to ensure that they get permission from the executing authority to continue their work and to be remunerated in addition. Now, you know, when I get this application from any staff member that says, I want to perform I want to do extra remunerative work, the first thing that I do is I request the supervisor to advise me on the performance of that person and whether we can actually sacrifice that person for extra time. If not, I refuse. I turn it down. And in instances where you turn it down, I mean, we can almost guarantee those teachers won't continue. And I must say, this is a very emotive issue at the moment, where there is a view, and I'm raising this because it's coming up here, there is a view that our educators must focus on the kids at this point in time, rather than spend the time doing other tasks, because when we look at it, there is a problem. The reality, however, is that the Employment of Educators Act has a similar provision like the Public Service Act at this point in time. But I want to say there is a groundswell that says we can't have this. We also know that the reality is that in some of the more remote communities, when people look at public office bearers and they look at who they want to elect, your teachers will come high up in that list because they are seen as people of high standing in communities. But I think we've reached a point 13 years down the line where we do believe we should make choices. And I think as Parliament, you also, and the NCOP, you presented with this challenge to consider. So what we are saying is let's put this in place, but let's bear in mind that we are going to debate this again. And you know that on the other hand, the act that was discussed earlier today, they are quite unequivocal where they say nobody, well, at least at local government level, should be taking up a political position. And it's issues we've got to engage with. So I don't think we should necessarily see some of these as contradictory. We must also remember that as we go forward, we are evolving because of experience and practice. And here, what we're doing with this legislation should not be seen in contradiction to that, because we are saying to a large degree, we want to translate into law what we have started developing as convention arising out of practices over the past 13 years, but that we may be forced and will be forced to take a more fundamental step on these matters. But for that, I think we'd want the debate that the Public Service Commission has opened up quite widely to... We want that debate to be quite public, because we also need to hear what communities say on this. And I think we can almost guess what may come, but we should not be second-guessing communities. We should allow engagement with them. And the NCOP has been well-positioned to go out to communities and solicit their views.
Thank you very much, Minister. Well, that's our responsibility. We love that passion to create and get communities out there. Well, I think we've dealt then with Mbombo, then we'll come to Mrad.
Yeah, let me formally say no, I'll report according to my province chair, because I told them that no, I got support from all provinces that this will come to an end, because it's a serious challenge, because the councillors, they spend most of their time in the council meeting, not in the classroom. That is serious, it's a serious problem. Why, for example, as you'll understand, I'm here, at home, the Royal Council, we have appointed my younger sister, she's in charge of the tribe there, and she's a teacher. But she's not remunerated as a traditional leader. She's not. Because the council rejected her. They said, no, because we're getting salary as a teacher, we can't pay you again. But this teacher is responsible, and our official. The question is why? Double standard. But I got a message, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mrana.
So, Chairperson, if it will help, we will pursue the practice of this and see how and what we can do to deal with this particular issue, because the double dipping issue is a problem, especially if there is not executive authority given, providing permission to them. And I think we should also ensure that we send out circulars, and we'll do it together with the Minister of Provincial and Local Government. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Mrana. Then in Mpumalanga, it's clear. In Northern Cape is clear.
Yeah.
Unclear. Then we'll go to Western Cape. Western Cape is clear. With no it means then that the provinces have spoken in relation to the bill. Now to come to the motion of it is an ability, so that we're able to go after this clause by clause in terms of the bill in relation to our requirement. Well, Mran.
Okay, I move that this committee, we think it is desirable for Parliament to have this legislation. I hope that the motion of desire is to be taken as read. You will simply sign for us, Chair. I so move.
Thank you very much, Mbana. Any seconder?
I do second the motion of desirability of this
Thank you very much, some things. Then we'll go close by close in terms of the deal. If on page one, the intention of the bill, the object of the bill, clause one, clause two, clause three, the definition. Yeah. Clause one, definition, agreed. Mr. Arusa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it's general knowledge that from the DA side we don't agree with the philosophy of a single public service, and therefore we will abstain from voting on each of the.
No, Chairperson, this is Section 76. There's no party issue here. The province is here. So you can't express the view of the party because this is Section 76, Chairperson. With due respect, Chair, and I rule that there is not a problem. I think you've heard, Mr. Aru, that it's voting according to provinces. That you can do in Section 75. Therefore, in that respect, it means the provinces will be voting. Close.
This is not the single public service legislation. So Mr. LaRue should also not, if he's participating, make a speech on that, because this is not the single public service legislation.
Mr. LaRue, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Minister. No, I appreciate that, but this is the forerunner to what we are eventually going to have.
No, they have been saying that. No, it's not... Minister, the issue that the GA can be changed here. It's a position that they've taken from the NA, therefore they are pushing it through all over.
Irrespective. I mean, we've discussed it even before the GA.
Chairperson, well, what should actually happen here is that Mr. LaRue has read the mandate from the province, which in terms of Section 65, whether he will be given the floor as a party, he will respond as a party there. As a province now, the province has given him the mandate to say yes.
You are caught, Mr. LaRue.
I concede.
Well, close to. Clause 3, clause 4, clause 5, clause 6, clause 7, clause 8, clause 9, clause 10, clause 11 on page 15, clause 12, clause 13, clause 14, Clause 15. Clause 15. Clause 17. Clause 18. Clause 19. Clause 20. Clause 21. Clause 22. Clause 23. Clause 25, Mr. LaRue.
clause 29, clause 30, clause 31, clause 32, clause 33, clause 34, clause 35, clause 36, clause 37, clause 38, which is the last one, the schedule. Clause 39, schedule 2, clause 40, schedule 3, yeah. Thank you very much. Well, I think then the eyes have it. They are not deserting to use it. On them, please. Yeah. Now we deal with them, man. Yeah, we deal with them. So, thank you. We deal with them. Well, I think then the Select Commission Local Government Administration has considered the subject of the Public Service Amendment Bill, B331D 2006, as amended by the Portfolio Committee on the Public Service Administration, the National Assembly, Section 76, referred to and classified by the Joint Taking Mechanism. As Section 76 bill reports that the bill without my amendment is agreed. Then that's a resolution of the committee on this matter. Can a person raise the issue? Yeah. Can I have a mover? Manyozi?
I move.
Thank you very much. The bill, I think, has been passed by the committee. It will be debated on the 20th in the National Council of Chambers, National Council of Provincial Chambers. I think it's in the programming, it's the first debate that we have on the day in question. It's the first debate. It means then people must polish their speeches and so on and all that. So that will be debated. And we have a very busy schedule the whole week. Quite busy. And it means then people must be starting now. Yeah. How many minutes, Professor? Okay. All right. That's fine. Thank you very much. I think then I want to thank the committee for their engagement on the bill. I must tell you that in the last meeting, when we had the meeting the last time, the minister, when I came out of the meeting, I got a message that she phoned. I phoned her back. I found that she was in Ghana. She says, no, I phoned. I found out that you are still debating the bill there. What is the program? I said, no, don't relax. The bill will be debated as we are processing it properly. And I think she came there to ensure that these things happen. This is not a joke. Not a joke. Minister, any parting shot?
I want to say thank you very much to the committee for the hard work done. I didn't think that the chairperson would expose me. But I was aware that there was a meeting last week. And I thought the chairperson keeps his phone on for extraordinary calls. Because my officials had not been particularly invited to the meeting and I was very worried about their absence. So I was phoning to just indicate to the chairperson, if there are any matters, let us know immediately, we will respond. Indeed, I came here today not to push the bill through, but to reflect our commitment to this particular legislation and our commitment to work with the committee. So I'd really like to reflect appreciation. I know, Chair, I noticed you were in a very great rush not to talk long. And it was not because you were worried about relations between the executive and the legislature. It was more because you were worried about your airtime. According to information I have, I think the receiving person pays for an international call, not the person who makes it. But I must say, I couldn't even reassure the chair. He was just in very much of a rush to get off the phone because he thought he was exceeding his time that he sets himself for business calls, you see, and then, but I'd want to reflect appreciation because I was in a meeting in Ghana at that particular point in time. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks for the commitment to the committee, of the committee, and I do want to say I look forward to the work we're going to do on the single public service. And Mr. Leroux, I would really want to you to allocate time and open be open to what we want to achieve with the single public service. Because I think in essence what we are doing is in the interest of the country and not in the interest of party politics. We have the responsibility to ensure that the quality and scale of services delivered to our people does meet both the expectations as well as the standards we'd like to set. And this committee has the ability to make that happen through the legislation we pass, but also through the oversight you do, because I think, as pointed out by many, there are a number of limitations in the public service, and it's not due to an absence of either policies or law. It's the application or lack thereof. And I think we have a joint responsibility to ensure that the implementation and application of the legislative and regulatory environment will ensure that the people of this country get access to the quality and scale of services required and what you and I have committed ourselves to achieve through our representation in this democratically elected parliament. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Well, the person that we can be able to twist his arm and agree with, and he goes and fight battles within the party caucus and wins, it wounds him. I'll tell you that the party doesn't like this taking parliamentary people, but he has gone to speak there, and he's able to he managed to win his view. He was deployed in KwaZulu-Natal as a person who, during the floor crossing, that he must stop the floor crossers. when he was there, people were literally not talking to each other. The ANC, the IC. But he's the one that broke the ice and talked to the ANC. When they said, how do you talk to dogs? He said, where are the tails for the dogs? And then he talked, he allowed space for people to talk to each other, to see that they're human beings. Then. Now I'm saying, if you lobby him, engage him, he'll be able to engage in the party without fear or favor. Therefore, Bums is a man. I'm not sure about the strength of Mr. Lolo.
You see, Bavan Zizi is not just a man, but I thought he's an in-law as well. So I didn't want to really expose that, but let's not say much.
Thank you very much. Now, I think let's allow Umrena to thank the minister for blessing this occasion with us. And because really, I think we highly appreciated it.
Thanks, Chairperson. Honourable Minister, thank you very much for taking our time. As our Chairperson said, it's very rare for a minister to come and engage in the sake of participating in the legislative process, especially when we are going through so many disclosures and stuff. We really appreciate it, Honourable Minister. You displayed this in not even today, but in many occasions. Even coming to appear before the NCOP, in responding to questions or participating in a debate, you're always available. Hence, you're the chairperson, wouldn't even have a problem when you're not going to be attending our the debate of this, because we know that whenever time is available, you are able to come and appear before us. It's really a cherry on top to us, Honourable Minister. We thank you ever so much. We know, as I used to say, no matter how deep the bottle is, Honourable Minister, the cream will always be on top. So you are in that last, Honourable Minister. You are a star. Some are just the moon, but you are a star, Honourable Minister. And your department, they've been so good in explaining this bill. Hence, this easy communication from ourselves to yourself and the department. It's simply because these officials who were close to issues, they make us understand what this bill is all about. For that, Honourable Minister, I think they copied from you, and I wish you can have many of this kind of officials in all the departments who are willing to go an extra mile to try and make life easy for members. I want to thank you as well for the kind of leadership that you've provided. Yeah, on that note, Honourable Minister, thank you very much.
Thank you, Morena. The link to that, then, Minister, we would like on this one, because as you think it's comprehensive, link to what has been said by Morena, that we are able to engage with you even in the conceptualization of the single process service. Because it is very difficult to engage on something at the tail end. But if you engage the, even before it comes to Parliament, and so that type of a thing that we engage on it, so that we understand, we grow with it. In that way, it makes it easier when we're able to engage in the people and the legislature. Thank you very much, Minister. Then tomorrow, there is a meeting to discuss. I think the ministers have been sent two things: the cross-boundary municipal law amendment act bill, plus the report to ADREC, the one that went to KwaZulu-Natal, Los Man. Then that's what we need to discuss tomorrow. Thank you very much. I think then the meeting will break a bit, come back maybe for some few minutes, 5 minutes, stretch, because we are continuing. We are working very hard. Now, the chairs will change. I become a member. Umrena then becomes the chair of security and consumer. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.